Okay, well, I'd like to welcome everybody here this morning, and we will, this is our October board meeting for the BSROA, and everybody hearing us okay on the recording? Vance, are you there?
Hello.
Yeah, I am. I just had to unmute for a second.
Okay, great. Just want to make sure of that. I've asked Barry Clarkson if he'd give us an opening prayer, and then we'll have a roll call and proceed with the agenda. Thank you.
God, most gracious Father in heaven, we have the Father for you and thank you for the opportunity which we have to enjoy the great outdoors and be here at Deer Springs Ranch. We're grateful for the opportunity that we have to participate in the credit process and discuss those things that relate to property ownership here at the ranch. And we pray that we might have our spirit be with us and help us make wise decisions and have open discussions as to how to benefit all those who participate here and all those who will come later. This we ask humbly in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Okay, let's see. Let's do a roll call. And it looks like we are missing Leland.
And Robert.
And Robert. Okay. And let's see. Candy, do you know the names of the other people here? Would you like to, would each of you just give us your names real quick for our minutes? Candy Bose is taking the minutes here. I can tell you we had Marcus and Marsh on the back row there.
Mark Ralph. Marcus Hamilton.
Rance Simone. And Michael Simone.
Great. Okay. Then, I'd like Joe to go over the, Candy to go over the minutes for the board meeting of August 2015.
There was no meeting in August.
Okay. All right.
Moving on.
I was reading the agenda and I just, okay. What about our very, very last board meeting that we did have?
September.
In July. Did we ever go over this? We already did that.
And I'd like to make a comment with that. It's been really good to be able to have the minutes approved by the board, submitted to Vance Green, and Vance Green has them posted within a week after the board meeting so that everyone can check on the minutes as to what has occurred previously.
Thank you for your efforts, Candy. Yes, Paul?
Meeting minutes audio or the written minutes?
Written and audio.
Okay, so there was a lot of comments made last year about just the audio being on, and there's some people that can't download everything. It's nice that they're able
to. Well, since Joe's been secretary prior last.
So yeah, I think you're meaning the year before or last.
I know.
Yeah, the year before.
Different board.
Every time
I think it's been appreciated by a lot of people.
Okay, our next item is to discuss the minutes from the annual meeting. We're not presenting them, just discussing them. Like, you were here for the most part of the meeting.
Right.
And then, you were the other part.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the discussion is where we at on writing this up. I think it's incumbent on us to maybe listen to them at our next board meeting and then keep them until the next annual meeting, and then we can approve them. But the longer we go without actually reading them, the less input we all might have.
I'll have them ready for the next meeting.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and we'll move on to our manager's report, Paul and Nancy.
The weather doesn't seem like October. I think you all agree. But it has been getting cold. It's kind of been prepping up to cap it down. The weather, something that, you know, we've had this problem all year where spring, grader sent out and grading, but I tell it's because of all the rain that we've got. So I'm kind of in process still of kind of cleaning things up and getting things organized, trying to get things ready to close down for the season. Reservations. I'm not sure.
Well, let me interject one thing right here. We often get questions from members about when are they going to come grade our part of the ranch. I would make a suggestion that for Robert, that maybe each month you summarize where you graded, let him have a running. We'll have him keep a running history of that. Because, you know, when people ask, well, when was the last time my road was ever graded? We can, with some assurance, give them an answer, you know. And then, you know, we can talk about the weather and all of that. But well, let's keep track of that just a little better, okay?
Okay.
All right.
I reported at the annual meeting about grading.
Well, let's do a month-to-month with Robert. Okay. And then I'll expect Robert to, from time to time, have that ready if anybody asks, okay? Okay. Carry on.
Basically, we're kind of getting ready to close the cabins down. I've been cutting a lot of wood. Ready for winter.
How's this winter work?
It's a lot of help. I had to build the wood splitter, and the pump had a plug on it. I didn't see the plug on the hydraulic hose on. I fired it up. It had all three of us for a good half hour trying to figure out why it wasn't working. But the log splitter's working good. Chainsaws. Good. That's split.
What about the generators?
So, the generators. We talked about looking at generators. Instead of running the big generator, we could run one of these ones. Still, Joe had asked if I could rewire one of the plugs to go to the 220, but not have both legs hot just run up on because it was off of it. There was no breaker on it. GFI breaker. So I rewired it and it tripped the main breaker on the generator. And I did go through the inverter and try to adjust the amps, and it's still tripping the generator. So I thought of using a small generator to run, you know, our system instead of using a big generator at $16 an hour. But still trying to work that out. This last month we've had an issue with our phone. We've had an issue with the power. Trying to diagnose everything. I'm working, you know, and our power's fine. Just trying to find an easier way to charge it without spending a whole lot of money.
Can I interject something there?
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, we don't get as much sun, and so they have to run the generator to have electricity, and going out to the well.
That's why he's trying to do this.
Yeah, so it's close to the, because almost, well, not every day, probably every other day, you need to run the generator to catch it up, right?
You know, when the days are short, it's stormy, and there's times when, you know, I like to just keep my power on top.
And that's why you're doing this effort.
Also, they moved the panels out further away from the trees so that they shot.
It was over here by the container.
Yeah.
By 2 o'clock, it was getting shade. So I wasn't getting full sun.
And I imagine you've calculated the right angles. And can you vary the angles on that? Depending on the time of year? Okay.
So, you know, basically, my report this month, in October, kind of winds up.
Which cabins will we keep winter accessible?
7 and 8 are usually open throughout the winter. And this year, there's been a problem in the past with shutting 7 and 8 down completely for the winter. But I've since put in new valves, cut them off, and blow them out. And, you know, because there'll be a month where it's sitting, the refrigerator's running, the hot water heater's running. So I'm trying to get it to where I can shut it off completely. And so those things aren't running nice and perfect.
Very good. So I have a question about the status of the grader then. Is it's repair, everything's working?
That oil leak's now fixed. Fixed it, yeah.
Any other?
A little piece of hose this big, 8-inch, high pressure, hydraulic, some weird thing. John Deere wanted $300 for the whole part. It's 8 feet long. I ended up just kind of coupling it together. It's kind of a deal trying to find this hose.
Glad you're resourceful. So, Joe, do you have any other questions about equipment?
No, I think we're good.
Okay.
The only question we had was an oil leak. It's possible for about a month.
Okay.
And then the leak on the Toyota. I've been sitting here because I'm done with it. I got a clean room. Except for what's in there.
On the inverter, did you get the amperage cut down on that?
Still pops right. I brought it down. I don't know what the deal is with that generator. It used to run off of this little generator.
Does anybody have a bigger generator that's portable and hard that we can run a test on it?
I have one bigger generator.
The same thing. The bring his down. If it pops his, then obviously we have a problem with the inverter, not with the generator.
I can run the big generator, and I've run this little generator.
Yeah, but the big generator is on a 60 amp. It's bigger than what the inverter
would. That doesn't make sense, because they run us, it started a 5-horsepower motor down here when we were running a test.
With it. Mine?
Yours did.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make sense.
It's something with the Brexit Stratton generator. It's a really nice generator. It runs.
Well, I would tend to think there's something wrong with the inverter. We'll bring yours down.
Well, maybe we could all get together with Brent and look at it and see what.
Okay. I'd like the board to pull out this job description here. You all should have a copy of this. Well, we'll leave it to you guys to work that out. Just kidding.
Months ago, there was a problem with the top of cabin one and the second half. And we proposed for next year to do some pumping.
Yeah, definitely. The group that was in there that had the problem to start with. We haven't had the same problem with any cabin. That was the first one. I think really what they did was overload the system. There was a lot of people there. It was just running water. I think it overloaded the system. And some, there was no raw sewage, but there was some smell and some dark water in the shower down on the bottom floor cabin. They cleaned it up and they left, and the cabin sat for 4 days before the next group came in. I told the group, I said, hey, I think these people just overloaded the system because we haven't had, I flushed the toilets, ran water for 15 minutes, and nothing happened. So I didn't want to dig it up and spend, you know, $1,000 to pump it because there wasn't a problem. So the next group came in and there was zero problems. Then there was another group that came in, and there was zero problems. So I think, you know, really what I wanted to do is just kind of skate by for this year on that system. And so in the springtime, I think it would be a good idea to maybe pick up cabin 1 and 2. I know 4 was done already, but pick up 1 and 2, maybe 3, and kind of get them taken care of and pumped out.
That would be a really good idea to keep that log going as to what year, what was done on specific cabin, so we can look back. And along with keeping record of the areas that you, the roads and brush hogging.
We do have logs for each cabin, what's been done in each cabin, and you know, how old is that hot water heater there, and how old is, so we do have.
Where do we keep these logs, and what kind of record book are they in?
I have a notebook. What we've written in it, I don't know before that. And we didn't start writing.
Do you have a notebook with dividers about different these different areas? Or are you just piling these?
I have it per cabin.
Per cabin. Okay.
And I don't have it from the beginning until we got here. I know that I have, I don't know.
You know, I think probably each year we should scan these records.
That's a good idea.
In case, you know, fire,
right.
You guys move away, you know, somehow, because that's always a little bit of a problem, but in this day and age, we should have a repository somewhere with electronic things, and...
Keeps their repository.
Okay. All right.
One quickie question. On that cabin and that septic, that's not an actual septic tank on there, is it? That's just kind of a makeshift thing?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's just a round tank, fiberglass tank, that was installed however many years ago. Brent's the one that told me where it was and the condition of it because he had to dig it up once. So.
How big is it?
It's a fairly large one. It's a tank on cabin one.
It's not a regular septic tank. It's a big fiberglass tank. And we located it, and I dug it up, and Ole was directing me. I'll take the blame, but I punched a hole in it. Not a good tank. And so we actually peeled that hole a little wider, pumped it from that hole, rather than try to find a port on it. I don't believe it even has a port on it. I think it was a fiberglass water tank. And I didn't bother to dig it all up. And then we patched the hole really good, and we buried it.
Is there leach lines?
I'm sorry?
Are there leach lines?
I don't have any idea. I'm assuming there are.
Yeah, there would have to be.
I'm just assuming there are. I don't know. There's, as far as I know, there's nothing... was filed with the health department as far as the, you know, the septic tanks and that go. I mean, it's a crapshoot, what it is. You just don't know what's there.
Literally.
But I don't know what's there. I don't know what's there or at the other cabin, to be honest with you. I can tell you cabin one is it's been working.
It works.
But I agree with Paul. I think it just got overloaded. There was a whole bunch of people there. They weren't out of the cabin much. They were just showering, flushing their toilets, running water, yada, yada, yada.
Okay, let's move on, unless you have anything else.
The whole thing, I'm glad he brought it up. You know, we can talk about it in our budget meeting. Talk about either redoing the one on cabin one, or start one of those logs where, you know, these cabins were popped this year, and then these cabins, you know, were here and here and here, and just try to start a record of.
Yeah. Perhaps we should actually scan what we have to this point in time and get it to Vance.
I can take the next few times.
Paul, does any of those septic tanks get treated?
Yes, we treat them twice a year.
So they should have the doing their thing.
I do it spring and fall.
All winter. So it really.
We have a question, but I just want to, has everybody found this list? Yes, I'll have this. Start looking that over and we'll start our discussion. You had a question? Okay. Yeah, we've had filing cabinets, and we've had some things have gone and disappeared. So that's whatever is, yeah, it's convenient, let's keep it, but let's always, at least annually, download our records.
If I can mention one thing about this list, Nancy neglected to put one of her biggest responsibilities in that long list.
Yeah.
There are things missing.
And unless it's on here, we'll add record keeping, huh?
No, I don't think.
Okay. So, everybody take, won't be a moment of, well, it'll be a moment of silence for about a minute. I want everybody to scan through this and jot down quickly if there's anything that comes to mind that you think of that you're not seeing here. How's everybody doing? While you're looking, I'd like to recommend or note that most, maybe not all, of these areas that Paul and Nancy do are also under certain areas of responsibility of the board members, like headquarters, Joe, and equipment, right? And Leland would be the
agricultural
thing. Mm-hmm.
Secure.
Question on gas lights. Are any of the gas lights in any of the cabins freezing up, locking up, not usable? Like I know Fred said, Fred Cyril said some of his gas lights he can't work them anymore. So I tell him that there's a special grease we can put on them.
Over the years, I've people mess with those things and they tweak them and, you know, there's moving parts in there. And over the years, I've learned how to fix.
My cabin's 20 years old, and I have gas lights in mine. I don't have a single one locking up. Fred says the truth are.
I was curious if any ones in the cabins. No, there was one in cabin one that I just fixed that there's kind of like a keyway where, you know, it won't go in the hole. So I, you know, fixed it to where it's just kind of sitting in the hole. But,
if they could make a special grease for that, for propane. On those, we could pull the stem out and put the grease on the back here and freeze them like that. We had to do it at the hotel where I worked. They used to lock up at the hotel on the stoves.
Right. Let's take just a minute to organize ourselves. It's kind of the next agenda item where we're to talk about board responsibilities, board assignments. So let's look at this, their responsibilities. Let's go down and match a board member, if possible, to each of these areas they've listed. So on this hospitality, I kind of think that's in John. It would be in your area, John.
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. And groundskeeping, I think that's probably in yours, Joe.
Yeah, for most of it.
Uh-huh. Is there anything that isn't? Some of this is... Some of cleaning out cattle guards might be.
It was just related to headquarters. It's the groundskeeping at headquarters. It's okay. The cattle guard right there.
Okay.
That's why I said it. But it might should be road.
I think you probably should list it under a road area, perhaps. Maybe that should be another title here, roads. So where does your grading that come under right now?
Equipment and vehicle maintenance. Oh, that'd be something different. We don't have the roads on there. Paul, you missed a whole realm of duties that you do.
Yeah, let's add that as a title.
Roads and laundry, I just totally spaced.
Okay. So under roads, maybe you can list at some point in time. We can look at it next month about what you do there. Yeah.
I believe that roads might fall under Robert and possibly me because of safety. I saw something about safety hazard caught would be my response.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. You should be aware of that. The physical structure and or upkeep probably is Leland, but
Yeah,
I mean, Robert.
My responsibility to let him know. So.
Yes, absolutely. Don't ever hesitate. Yeah. Okay. Cabins. There's kind of cabins and spring mixed in together here.
Spring and cabin.
The springs that go to the cabin.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Oh, in the springs. Sorry. Yep. I stand corrected. Okay. So let's see. Who do we have?
I'm on cabin.
Okay. So all of those cabin things. Okay. Water systems, sorry?
Mm-hmm. Well, throw it again, Joe, because that would be under the cabin maintenance.
Okay. And equipment and vehicle maintenance is Joe. Solar system. Joe, you're on here a lot. Budget, Jody?
Yep.
Relationships, John? I think I probably should be on there a little bit myself on with relationships to the Forest Service or so. What has to do with relationships? Well, let's see. Let me read over what you got here again. It's probably more under my area, I would think. Yeah. Okay. And security. John?
Be me. Security be me. That would take care of some of this upcoming hunting season, which starts next weekend.
Okay, and then Leland would... the agriculture. And then, so these other areas that we don't have listed down here, would be records, and I think Jeff, as far as website, I'd like you to, Jeff, really cultivate a relationship with the Ants, as far as our webpage and all that he's doing, and, these records we want to scan as a board liaison with Vance, if you could be our man, go-to man, okay? All right, were there any other areas that anybody noted or had questions about as far as your job description?
Would you be the laundry be under you also?
Right. On the cabin, so I guess in a way, yeah.
I think just insert laundry underneath cabin spring and cabin spawn.
Yeah. Sure, I think there's a cabin, just normal.
Yeah.
So you have broad shoulders, I'm glad. Your name's down here a lot.
That's because of you, I think. You have broad shoulders. I got a question on the security. It's not my area, but helping transport is necessary. And I agree with that. Do we charge for any of that? And the reason I ask, when I work at the Luxor right here, people had flat tires. We used to go out, the engineers would send somebody out, they'd change a flat and off they'd go, they'd jump start a battery and off we'd go. And all of a sudden we start getting some lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
People getting hurt, vehicles being damaged, and the hotel changed their whole outlook and said, from now on, if there's a flat tire, all we'll do for them is call a company to come out and change it for them. So we never charged them. But after a while, we quit doing it gratis and we sent an individual or a private.
You had a contact.
Yeah, we had a contact.
Or a procedure.
And towing. So should we do something right there? I mean, something small, yes, we should do. But if it's something this stuff really bad, we got to put a chain on it. If we break something, I don't want to be responsible and have the ranch have to pay for damage that a backhoe does with a chain.
Because almost guaranteed they built vehicles.
So
there's been hundreds of times when I've pulled people out or say something. What this was referring to was if somebody's stranded, it takes a little bit of our time to either push them out, pull them out, call the tow truck company, whatever.
I've done it too. I've pulled people out. I even towed a vehicle all the way to Kanab one time, but it's just not a good idea for us to do that.
Would it be a bad thing to carry a waiver in the tractor or the pickup, and they just sign a waiver saying we don't hold you responsible?
Well, I agree with that, but, if you ask Barry, I worked for International Harvester, and we had a truck in our shop one day, and we called the guy and said, hey, come pick your truck up. It's done. And he waited, and we were all fenced in, and 3 days later when he picked it up, he says, well, I'll pay the bill as soon as you replace my spare tire. So I go outside, and there's dust in the back of his bed, and there's no remnants of where the tire was. So I said, no, we're not going to buy a spare tire. There wasn't one there. I mean, if you remove the tire, there's going to be a ring where the tire was in the dust. He took us to court. The judge says, I don't care what your waiver says. If you buy the man a tire, he'll pay the bill. End of conversation. So what good's a waiver?
I've seen that. A good lawyer, that is more
expensive. It wouldn't hurt to have it.
After that, well, there's two different things. The business situation where you're charging them to repair and stuff, that's different
it's America's laws. If you're just helping somebody out, you have some protection in the law already. So I don't know if the waiver is going to make a lot of difference one way or the other. The question is there some doing pulling them out as an individual or as a representative of the ranch? It's pretty hard for Paul to separate because it's his job. If he's pulling out people, there's a problem. You're still covered with the Good Samaritan laws, but it's different than, say, Joe or me pulling somebody out because I'm doing it on my as an individual. It's not part of my daily job and my, you know, hours of work, so.
And also the people who that have been pulled out, I don't know that there's been any private vehicle. They're all rental cars. And they're not going to tell anybody that the damage happened off-road because they're not supposed to be off-road, and then they're going to be in trouble for going off-road.
We pulled a plastic front off a Jeep one time.
You just have to use good judgment.
So a perfect example, there was a truck stuck coming from Podunk couple weeks ago, and I really didn't feel comfortable pulling it out, and I told him to wait a few days, and I ended up being, I was busy the day that he pulled out, and I turned it over to Brent. Brent helped him out.
Well, he was a member of the ranch, so.
Yeah.
Joe, does that answer your question, or your...
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, me.
If it's severe, you know, there was a Jeep that got washed down here, and it had to be dug out, be pulled out, and I... I said we should kind of just have him call somebody else.
We call Ramsey.
Yeah.
Call Ramsey and have Ramsey give him a kickback. Add to the budget here.
Okay, let's keep moving. You have this on a computer program. Can you? I'd like you to. I'm just asking if you have a file so you can modify this. So add the other records and laundry. Add the names of these board members, and then email it to us if you like.
Can I add two more things in there? Under equipment and vehicle maintenance, Paul, you need to add on their logbook to keep up to date on the equipment. And then under cabin spring, I would say spring because you're getting ready for the season. Making an update in the cabin notebooks like you guys just did. So you add that in there because you guys do that too.
Then if you find that you do something that you haven't listed here, add to it. This is a living kind of working document. So
this was just kind of thrown together.
I realize that. Yeah. So I'm sure there are things that we haven't picked up on that you've forgotten. But I would like to make this as a comprehensive part of an employee manual thing. And
what I started doing too, you mentioned it a few months ago, was kind of have a calendar, just kind of jot down things so that next year, you know, this time, you know, it was snowing or, you know, so I can go back and kind of see what happened last year at this time.
Yeah, I think that would be a good companion to this if you put in here generally a description month by month of what your main thrust is or the things that have to be done like in October or by October or November or whatever. I think we talked about this way back a year ago and it's just hard to get it done, but this was a good first effort. I appreciate it. Thanks for doing that. And if you board members think of anything else, give them a call and let's try to improve upon this through the month. And
you didn't put it in here, but you've been doing it. You have that magnet. You've been picking up mail, so make sure you call us.
How do you do that?
Okay. So we're going to clarify just for a minute what the liaison thing, what this means, purpose of the liaison for ranch managers. And I wanted to mention, by the way, Bob's not a member of the board, but he is our guru on keeping this going here. And so don't be intimidated by Bob. I mean, he's just really an intimidating guy. And also, I wanted to make you aware that he's very commendable, volunteered. He's had this liaison with the HOA associations, and that was his, one of his assignments as a board member when he was a board member. But as far as keeping in touch with the HOA organization in the state and the meetings, I've asked him as to be our resident expert for the board to do that. So Bob's not a voting board member, but he's graciously offered to continue helping us out with communications, and if you have questions about HOA matters or if things come up to them on the state level that, hey, you guys ought to all be aware of this, he's going to report that to us. So thank you. I'll have a round of applause for Bob. So back to a liaison for ranch managers. I'm going to have Linda give us a little history on that because she's in the middle of it.
I am the liaison between the board and the ranch members, and we created this position because on emails and communications that go through, there's a lot of discussion that goes on with the board, and it gets kind of cumbersome for the managers themselves to have to watch that and sort through it for what they need. So we decided to separate that. And if there's a concern or a problem or something that needs to be discussed, the board member will come to me, and then I will discuss it with them and bring an answer back. That sounds laborious, but what it's done is freed them to do their job and freed them from politics in the ranch, which we all know there is, and freed them from having to stand on one side or the other on those politics or whatever. And so it let them just do their job and let them be able to get the things done that need to be done for the ranch. And when something important comes up that needs to be specifically done right away, then they communicate also with the board members as well, but not as much as was happening before. I think it's been working well. How do you feel about it?
I like it. It works really well. She knows always what we're doing. I mean, even on our off time, she knows where we go and what we do. We just tell her everything. So if there's ever a question, there's not just our memory. There's records, and we, you know.
And I might add, Liz has been pretty good about if there's a question she feels like that hasn't been sent to the board or just came up, and that the board should be considering it. She's been good about sending that to me, and then we have a little parlay and try to come up. And if there's some official thing that has to be decided right away, sometimes that responsibility falls to me to let her know that it's okay to do something. But in the past, sometimes different board members would maybe come up with something on the spur of the moment that hadn't been discussed or wasn't a policy, or I can't think of an example right now. But at any rate, it's an effort to make sure they have their standard job, and that's why we're reviewing their responsibilities. But things outside of that, oddball things, can sometimes keep them from attending to their normal duties, and to be a little more careful of that. And to be aware of what they're doing, that's why we have Linda to help us out there. Does everybody understand that process? Well, each board member has an area of concern. And Paul's real good about if it's roads, trying to get a hold of Leland. If you can't get a hold of Leland, then Robert. Sorry, Leland. I renamed you today.
Get more jobs.
Can't get a hold of Robert Musco, then and tries to get a hold of me, or he gets a hold of Linda to get a hold of me, or, you know. So we're each trying to communicate best we can to get the job done, whatever it needs to be.
And it's been working, in my opinion, it works really well.
For years, it was really tough to answer to seven different board members and answer to lot owners. And so it's really nice, you know, if there's an issue, you know, to contact Linda.
So if they don't feel easy or that this is something outside their normal realm or an unusual request that might, may or may not be, you know, they don't have, they can have somebody, a third party to go to get it out to us And they don't sound like crybabies. They don't sound like belligerent, non wanting to comply. You know, it's a little bit of insulation to keep them busy with what they do and not get them off on stray paths a little bit.
And you said it just a moment ago when you said that if they have a problem and they give it to me, I take it to you, and you all parley.
Right.
And then you give it back to me and I take it to them. That parley part is what was dragging them down. And so,
hundreds of emails.
Yes, going back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
I have trouble keeping track of them.
But there's like no reason for us to know all the
Till there's a decision.
There's a decision, and then we go in front of it.
Tell me what to do.
And it also makes them their view is important to us, but when it should be a decision kind of by the board, not wanting to be power mongers, but it doesn't make them at odds with us or some power struggle or anything, and that way we keep a little better relationship, I think. That's all in my view.
But for you new board members, I'm here. If there's anything that you need to share with Paul and Nancy that you want me to...
No problem with me. I know from work that I have been for years, you can't answer to six or seven bosses. You can only answer to one because everybody has a different opinion. The guy stuck in the middle does not know which way to go.
We skipped over maybe on this thing, Grayton's job description, I mean salary. We'll discuss that in our executive meeting, the salary part.
Yeah, you skip. I'm
still
on three.
Oh. I'm still on three. Let me get Nancy's.
Give me
the
salary down the next
category. Oh, yeah, I skipped down a little bit.
We're just finished.
Now, I think their expectations, they wrote those expectations out, and I think...
You need to have a copy.
I think that will be part of the executive thing. I mean, we'll just read that paragraph, unless you want to verbalize anything other than what you wrote. Okay.
I don't think so. I get that kind of
clear.
And it's pretty much all communication.
Okay. All right. So we're on number four
like
here.
One.
And this was to give us a little input if you had some project. So this is item 4A, number one. Please report on your stewardship and what the projected cost will be. And I realize that's a pretty tough thing, and we've got Jody here who will be discussing the financial part, and we can interject, but so without the numbers per se or a little bit of indication of how into it you want to get, I guess, I'm going to start down here with Leland on the agricultural, and just we'll just work our way down here as to what we may or may not want to get done this year.
Well, I know there's still some fencing that we have to work on. We're just kind of biting off a little piece at a time. Up in our area, I was noticing we're getting cows in an area. I know this is a fence out state. The Deer Springs Ranch fence, I think, is in need of some repair up that direction because we seem to always have the Brinkerhoff's cows in our area. So I think that area, that fence needs to have a little bit of maintenance done on it. Just from the sheer volume of cattle that seem to be in there on a regular basis, it's not good. To keep them over in their place, I guess. But fencing, I think, is probably the biggest.
I know.
Anything
in your area?
That's on the agriculture. The wildlife, I've got to make some more phone calls on that. I think that's still kind of going through Dale's son on the tags. So
The deer tag, the depredation stuff. You have something?
Yeah, Larry and I work together on that. He's in touch with the association that handles that, but as far as, you know, the wildlife and stuff on the ranch, that kind of goes through both of us.
Could you explain how that works? Like what you told me, like, yeah, so I think everybody'd like to know that.
Oh, they assessed the grounds on Deer Springs. They came up with a number.
Landowners Association.
Came up with a number for the areas that are grazable with water, and they came up with a number, and it was like 18. I could be way off, but I think it's, they came up with a number. And so the ranch kind of gives up the rights to these tags in order to receive a check for, you know, these areas that are being taken by wildlife. So we get a check every year instead of these tags.
What we used to do in the past was we would sell these tags, and I remember board meetings where it was discussed how much to sell them for, and we got a lot of input from Larry. And Larry, and I don't remember what brought us to the decision, but it was thought it was best, or we would actually gain more, and we could have cash by going through the Pontiac Landowners Association. It was more structured, and we would be dealt with fairly. And I think that's the gist of it, right, Paul?
Well, guaranteed income every year. Like this year, there's nobody in line to hunt the ranch. So but that is another source of income. We're allowed to have hunters up to 18 people come up on the ranch, and that we're required
to allow them.
And so they pay a trespass fee, and then a lot of times they'll rent the cabin. And so that's been another source of income for them. Giving up the rights to the tags, it kind of just allows us a guaranteed income every year. It's been pretty good.
But there shouldn't be hunters over in Podunk, and or in Slide, and so if you're noticing hunters over there, you should give us a call to see if we've got somebody going out, which we don't right now.
We've had a couple of people we don't
drive through, and then drive up through the gate up into the...
They were up there glassing. Yeah. There was a gentleman up there last week, sitting on the road with his field glasses.
On your street road?
Mm-hmm.
You have all the rights to tell them they're not allowed to be there.
Okay. You need to let us know on that.
There's a question here for clarification. Yes, Marcus.
Are the tags for the state, or is that a private tag?
It's just like drawing, you know, any kind of tag. You put in for it back in.
Larry.
That's the guy over there.
You're something in Bernie, huh?
Yeah, your name's been brought up.
You need to pick your brain in a deeper as it is.
Larry, what's going on is we've just been discussing the Pontiac Landowners Association and how the ranch gets money from that, and kind of the history of why we went to that rather than selling tags individually, and maybe you could...
We didn't have any choice in the matter. The state, years ago when the Landowners Association was given tags, it was allotted by how much acreage you had under mechanically irrigated and mechanically harvested alfalfa or open range land, and Deer Springs qualified for a certain number of tags. As soon as somebody started making money on it, all the other ranchers and farmers all wanted to jump into the pile. And so it went from 15 or 20 landowners in the association to 178 landowners in the association.
That's the Pontiac Landowners Association.
Yeah. So the state started cutting back the tag numbers because they were just coming, they couldn't give one to everybody and your qualifications based on the acreage and everything at Deer Springs at one time. I mean, we've averaged one to two tags per year when we were given tags. That was all changed probably. I've forgotten what year, but it's been 10, 12, maybe 15 years ago that the tags, instead of being given to the Landowners Association, to be given to individual members, which Deer Springs is one individual member of that association, the tags were given to the Sportsman Fish and Wildlife to auction off at their banquets. And then the proceeds of that money is divided to the Landowners Association according to their multiplier.
And do we get that multiplier reviewed every once in a while?
Yeah.
Those tags can be hunted anywhere, right? Not,
yes.
It isn't specific to our
right, band. No. They are Ponsagant, the limited entry Ponsagant unit. Those tags can be hunted anywhere. But by virtue of us belonging to the Landowners Association, we have to allow, by state law, we're supposed to allow every landowner associate or landowner tag and an equal number of general draw tags access to the property, which the legislature and everybody involved has said, well, that doesn't make much sense because there's 23 tags, and so that'd be 46 total people that could potentially hunt Deer Springs Ranch.
So we have an example here. Leland, tell us about where this guy was scoping.
He's right on top of the hill going toward Balcom. Just as you crest over before you head down, he's sitting there, he was glassing to the east, glassing the hills over there. Never seen him before. And he was right in the road. He had no thought. He had moves. On the last weekend.
You don't know who, did you find out?
He was in a little red Toyota Pickup.
Little license plate, yes, sir.
It's an older gentleman with a white beard.
What they've basically told us is, as long as we will, right now, Deer Springs roughly, we don't really even qualify for one full tag. The tags, I haven't followed them this year to know what they sold at auction, but they've gone anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000 per tag. Our portion of the money was about $7,500, $7,800. So Deer Springs is only receiving cash value of about half a tag because of all the other landowners that have entered the, you know, that you start slicing that pie smaller and smaller and smaller.
Let me ask you this. It might be just a drop in the bucket, but where I've developed 2 to 3 acres of grass and I have 2 ponds, is that too small to help us in any way?
You need 20 acres.
Well,
cultivated.
You have to have 20 acres of cultivated and mechanically harvested crop to even qualify under that standpoint. The only way Deer Springs qualifies is on open rangeland, which is 640 acres, is one qualification and one multiplier. So our 2,000 acres in common gets us, you know, we have one of the larger open rangelands entries into the unit, but only our association land can even qualify. The reason years ago that we got more tags was because we had 8,000 acres. I've heard a lot of people say, well, God, I think Clarkson's used to get a lot more tags. Well, we did because we had 8,000 acres. 6,000 of it now is cut up into 20-acre parcels, which none of those can qualify. It's only the association land that qualifies.
Okay.
Well, then there's the association, which we just explained how those tags will work. When a hunter comes on the ranch, we are allowed to require that he has a guide because of those 20-acre parcels, correct? So we require anybody that's hunting on the ranch to be guided to know where they can hunt, but we have to allow them because of the law.
And what I was starting to say is we only have to allow one landowner tag and one general draw tag, and it's only on a request. But, you know, it's not just like, okay, we have to allow everybody that wanders in. We can tell them, hey, I'm sorry, we've already, you know, we've met our quota. We've got so-and-so and so-and-so. And so every year, anybody that's contacted me, I've kept a list of who, if anybody, I've said, okay, you're the first to contact me. I've checked with Paul, or I've told them, hey, call Paul. And one guy this year, I don't know if he ever hooked up with you, he called me while I was in Alaska, and I just said, hey, I'm out of state right now, call Paul if you want. I've never heard back from him, so I think a lot of them come down and then they realize, well, the
place I want to hunt is over here, and I'm in a camp somewhere else, and so they don't bother coming back through, which is okay. Yeah, I got paid.
Okay, so our relationship as a ranch, I mean, we're grateful for your guidance and your advice. And so when they need a guide, I don't look upon that as a way for the ranch to worry about making money.
Really, it's only to the ranch itself, I think, is more of a safety issue than a revenue issue.
Right.
Simply because nobody knows, unless you've been here, what's over that hill or what's behind that tree.
So, like, if this fellow did come and you'd refer him to Paul, what would be Paul's protocol?
First, you'd probably talk to him and find out, has he been here? Does he know the area? Is he planning to hunt XYZ, which canyon? And then, does Paul have time to kind of give him a little tour? Or does he want to call me? Or
and should Paul be
or somebody that's kind of familiar with the area?
We've really worked together.
And should Paul, on behalf of the ranch, be charging this guy to have a guided thing?
Sometimes they come and they rented a cabin for the week.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes they pay a trespass fee.
It's $500, right? Okay.
There haven't been really any. Deer Springs is a hard place to hunt. It's an easy place to road hunt and just drive through and, you know, accidentally. But typically the hunters that are hunting the Poncegon aren't just looking for a deer to fill a tag.
The lifetime tag.
They've spent upwards of $100,000, and they're hunting a specific deer. They've got people they've been paying for 6 months or a year to track and follow that deer, know where it is.
They have the tags for the last 5 years.
Yeah. So it's...
A lot of deals for the high-end people.
Which end?
Sometimes both ends.
Okay. Well, thanks, Larry. We need to keep moving on.
Thanks,
a little behind on our agenda.
Maybe a note is where I'm kind of over that area. You guys keep me abreast of what's going on with the tags. It's been kind of a
just real quick. In addition to the deer tags, there's potential out here of turkey, mountain lion. So, you know, we really haven't pushed it as a revenue source. I don't really see that. I don't see it as something that the association wants to really push, but it is there. And so if people want, also there are members that occasionally draw tags. And so we try to give them preference. Obviously they don't have to pay a trespass fee.
They're not allowed to just go and hunt.
Members. So they're allowed to do what then?
Contact.
They'll let us know.
Just kind of the same thing.
Partially because if somebody else calls and talks to me or Paul and says, hey, I've got a tag and I want to come in and hunt, and we say, yeah, and then we've got a member that's like, hey, why did I buy land there and you're letting some stranger from Salt Lake?
The morning of the hunt, you know, as you're sitting there glassing the deer, somebody with a four-wheeler comes passing by. You know,
and so where can a member, if he has a tag, hunt? Not on lot members' land or can he? Or what's our position there?
We've always allowed hunting on all the association land and obviously all the public land in and around surrounds it. There are private lots that are unhuntable, but it just depends on what activities going on. You know, somebody's now got a cabin there. So obviously you're not going to be hunting right through somebody's front yard. That's where it comes into forms to have Paul or me or somebody to be with them at least to know
what the intentions are.
There's a nice buck running through that field, but
like Larry said, most of the time, for the last 6 months, they've been stolen the same deer. They know where it is. They're just waiting for October 17th to go and shoot it. That's usually what...
That's what these guys are paying big money for, but this guy just... buys a tag and happens to draw out, and he's not a professional hunter, just a regular hunter.
We had one last year.
We had those two.
So if he sees a deer in the canyon meadow.
Well, that has happened in the past. It's just somebody driving through and big deer jumps out and runs out across the sagebrush at Broadfall or Meadow Canyon. Chances are they're going to jump out and shoot it,
and that's okay.
No, it's not okay.
That's cost issue from the road.
unless they walk off the road.
Somebody's there watching them.
So, if you see somebody hunting,
if they're an ethical hunter, they're going to say, "Man, I wish I had permission to hunt here." But
well, what if they talk to Paul and they aren't a member and
they
haven't
paid their trespass fee, or they're a member,
and they're a member, and that happens. Is that allowable? I would just look for an example. Is that allowable to shoot? You know, okay.
Not from the vehicle or on the road.
No. Yeah, I mean, if they get out of their vehicle, they walk off the road. Yeah.
If you see somebody hunting, if there is a question whether they've already talked to them or not, please get their license plate. Then we can do something with it.
Morning at a hunt. I'm out there at 3:00 in the morning sitting by the airstrip. As people are. And this week, I'm going and posting a sign up in the forest so people don't drive all the way down and find that the gate's locked. You know, there's always been that issue with the gate lock, but it's the 2 weeks a year that we're allowed to lock it, and that's the 2 weeks that we choose. So, and, you know, I've talked to everybody that's driven through looking, scoping for deer. Hey, this is going to be locked and closed off to private use.
So Leland, let's keep Leland in the loop then, and that'll be good.
Sweet.
All right. Anything else, Leland, you want to? Yeah.
That's,
we talked about doing some, killing some rabbit brush earlier, but,
there's a perfect example. I spent, 5 days brush hogging the upper field and brush and draw hollows. And I neglected to do it for a long time just because I know if I brush hog it, rabbit brush is going to come back twice as thick, and there's no grass to plant it in. There's really nothing in that field. So, you know, if we look at certain fields, I think it would cost about $2,500 to drill that, to plant that field. You know, I'd really like to budget some money to where if I do brush hog something, we can buy some seed and plant it so that something comes up other than just keep brush hogging.
We have the drill. All we need is the seed.
Okay. Rabbit brush is best killed in June, too, in June, July. It's going to be
able to look at the areas that you're responsible for and saying, these are the ideas that I have that I'd like to do for the year. Number one, it can drive the budget, decide where money needs to go. Number two, make your area and you as a board member accountable so that throughout the year you can see what you've done. At the annual meeting, this is what I wanted to do, this is what I have done, and again, it makes you accountable and how the ranch proceeding forward. And that's why I think this is a really good idea for each person to come up with those ideas and actually so I like that, and that's why I was asking. Spoken about before, but nothing happened. So if that's what we want to do, that's something we should follow through with. What I'm getting.
And I think part of that was we had money. We needed money for roads, but I'm not sure.
This year.
This year. I can see we might get bogged down here. We're getting a little bit behind. I'm going to adjust the agenda for a second.
For the action.
Definitely. Yeah. So look at your agenda. I think there's an important... as I look at the whole agenda, I think we need our financial report for sure, and we need to, and we really need to get to the water proposal, and. And so I'd like to do this. Let's talk about the booking group reservations for the moment, and then I want to go right to Jody on our what we've spent and what money we have and different categories and our expectations, and then that might give each one of you in your areas a little bit more input as to what we've done in the past, what we've spent, and what you might look for. And I want us all to be able to fine-tune that a little bit more in our next month's meeting so that we can be prepared in December to send out our proposed budget.
December 1st.
December 1st, yeah. So, let's see. Discussion on booking group reservations at your ranch. Linda, did you have questions on that?
I didn't.
You didn't?
I don't know.
Well, that might have been me.
Okay.
It was, you know, last month, but maybe it was discussion we had with Paul and Nancy last night, so I think we covered that. Basically, just to go over quickly, when we have groups come to the ranch or come to anybody at the ranch and say, hey, we want to bring a group out here, it needs to go to Linda first thing. Right after you say, hey, just give them Linda's phone number, contact information. They call Linda so that we can know, number one, Linda will tell us as a board when, what, who. And I think they need to get a little bit more detailed on the group bookings, and they need to sign a contract beforehand. They need to do a deposit so that we know how many people are coming, we know what's going to show up, we know what they're going to do, we know what we need to have ready for them, and then they pay us at the event the day. So we had the conversation with Paul and Nancy last night about that. But for anybody here, if anybody comes up and they have a group that wants to come in, I'm talking like outside groups that want to rent the place or stuff like that, or any kind of group, really. If it's a family here that wants to bring a whole bunch, pass them on to Linda first so we can get it all organized, and we won't be waiting for payment if we don't get payment and that kind of thing, just to keep us a little bit ahead of the game instead of behind the game.
As far as groups go, I think we get our guns with putting too many people in the cabins. I'm not in favor of that. I understand sometimes we get 20 or 30 people in one cabin. That's a safety issue, and we could get our butts in the ringer with a lawsuit if something happens. So
yes. I think we're holding firm to that. I think we talked about that a couple of meetings ago.
I think you interviewed them, Linda, about what they're bringing. Right?
I'm waiting to get closer to the date.
Okay. I'll just say this about rules and regs. I just wanted to, we're going to be putting that out with and everything. And, you know, we struggled and took a lot of time last year going through that. And I think we're still in the process of seeing how that plays out as monetarily. And so there were a couple of areas. I wanted to know if there were any areas that we need to discuss that need to be added or changed with the rules and regs. And I want that to be a topic of communication between us this next month, so that by next month, in November, we can say, okay, our rules and regs will stand as they are, or if there's something you feel strong about that we need to modify, then anybody have a feeling on that right now?
Okay,
Jeff?
I read through them last night, and I found a lot of questions I have. Like it talks about, just for example, in the rules, or actually the registration for the restriction, it talks about firearms. And you can't be there, you can never point to a patient, but you can go. And over here, so there used to be a little gun range down below. That's there. Tell people we can't do it. Actually, we say.
Why don't you read that part for us?
The discharging of firearms shall be allowed only within areas designated by the association. Safety practices must be exercised in the use of firearms at all times. Areas where unlawful use of firearms shall be cause for restrictive and or disciplinary action by the associates. All laws relating to the use of firearms hunting and fishing should be strictly enforced. But we never tell them that there is a place where you can do it.
Comment.
Yes.
Yeah, that was addressed 2 years ago with the board, and Ben Clarkson, we discussed that thoroughly and about the liability with the gun shooting, and there was one. There was a gun shoot over there, and it got down to when we checked legal here and there, because he was in charge of legal then, and it was basically, we don't really want to have anywhere in the ranch area that we say is okay for them to shoot, holds us more liable, and Barry might jump in whenever he wants there. So we said, We can still do the firearms thing here, but let's not encourage anywhere on the ranch property per se to do that. Let them go off the ranch property, shoot on their own, and that way it will release us of that liability. And, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, somewhere.
It was just said that, so, and that was discussed between the board. I don't know if we entered a motion or whatever, but it was kind of like left that way. So it needs to be addressed. You're right.
And on the amendment, there's some grammar issues left out. I read through this, like, I think that you probably need to review them and make modifications and then.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Jeff, will you email us
sure.
your concerns, and then let's make sure we go back and forth and talk about those this coming month.
Would you like any memory?
Yes.
If you can provide me a Word version of the document, I'd be more than happy to go through it. At least give you my 2 cents when it does that. Suggestions and more things. For example, on the gun range thing, you're better off designating a place than not. People will shoot other places, but if you don't designate a place, like you're not allowing that to happen.
And there's a beautiful spot just off the ranch, which looks perfect for.
I think you're better off wherever it is, and I don't know, but designating a spot and saying this is the designated spot. And then if somebody complains or something, then you can say, well, we've done our job. We've designated a spot. That way you don't have to change the rules a whole lot, and it will work better that way.
Can we designate off the ranch? Because we always send them to down at the windmill down there, 2 miles from here.
Is it on the BLM allotment?
Yeah.
Trains to the ranch? Yeah, you're fine there. That's property controlled by the ranch.
The reason this came up is in the summer, I was up here, and there was a group of men down at the Red Reservoir shooting towards the Red Reservoir. And I was like, wait a minute, you can't be firing up here. And they said, where should we go? So there used to be gun range, but they were probably, hopefully in a Boy Scout troop or somebody, but there were about 25 people with guns shooting towards the Red Reservoir.
Very,
I would not put it near the headquarters. This spot here is fine for the shooters, but it makes a lot of noise, so.
Well, and it's not really fine because we have cattle out there.
I mean, the bottom line is find a designated spot. Yeah. Then you can
this
say,
spot has worked perfect.
This is where you're supposed to go. This is a designated spot.
Now, we're talking about common ground, right? Because I think we had a big discussion. Larry came in. If somebody wants to shoot their pistol on their own property,
can't do anything.
They can't regulate that.
So, Barry, are you thinking that we should have a designated spot inside the association land or outside, like on the BLM? Or
either one. Pick a place that's away from where everybody's at that has a good backstop to it, you know, a ridge or something like that, and say that's the spot. It'd be nice if it was more centrally located than down here, but bottom line is I don't have any input on where to pick the spot, but you're better off and you have a better legally defensible position if you say we have designated a spot and this is where it is. If you chose to shoot somewhere else, then we can then we can take action.
Okay.
Yeah, that spot that Paul mentioned, we've gone down there a lot, and it's got a backdrop to shoot into. You know where your bullet is going to land, and it's not going to bother anybody noise-wise, and it's very close. It just takes a few minutes to get over them. And it is BLM land allotted to us.
Okay, well, let's move on the spot. We can talk about that, but I, on behalf of the board, I'm totally willing to have you review the grammar and the speakies of the document, and that'd be fine. Question for everyone?
Absolutely.
Just because
people
sometimes look at us and they're like,
oh, you know,
we can do whatever we want.
No. And yeah, sometimes people think that. Please let us know when you see things like that. If you see shooters like that, please, you guys have got a radio. Just call us. You know, there's about 6 shooters up here shooting at Red Reservoir. Let us know.
Yeah. Our radio. Yeah.
If they don't know about it, we can't do anything about it.
Never has the right to say, solid assistance.
Yeah. I have a motion ready for that one if you want to do it.
You know, like I said, if you can shoot it on the softy, but you better know where it's going to stop.
If you want
you cannot shoot
mouse
if you want somebody else's property.
Right.
You can. It has to stop on yours if you got to shoot on it.
All right. We're going to move on. Jody, just there is one thing that's probably important for us to discuss, and that is discussion on board member attendance. And, you know, as a board member, it's kind of a given. If you run for a board, you plan on being there as often as you can, and if possible, every board meeting. But life is always full of interesting curves, and everyone's going to have a time or two or something maybe where they can't. But as far as commuting their annual dues and then they don't come but once during the year or something, Jody has some thoughts on that. I'm going to let her talk about that.
Yeah, we've had the problem for at least the last 4 years, maybe even longer than that. And we have people that are elected by the membership to be here and represent them, and then they just don't come. And they don't come for a lot unless there's something important that, you know, in their area that they want to talk about that time. So we didn't want to repeat that. Right? We don't think it's fair to the membership to have that. If they don't want to be on the board, they should just let us know they don't want to be on the board and resign or move on or whatever. So I would like to make the motion that any board member that does not attend three or more scheduled meetings during a year forfeits their assessment waiver. We can't take them off the board. That's not the point. It's just, why should they benefit from their assessments when they're not showing up and participating? So I'd like to put that motion on the table to second it.
Is there any more? Let's ask if there's any more discussion on that matter. I'd like to just say that we don't absolutely hold 12 board meetings during the year. We don't. So you mentioned three?
More than three.
More than three.
And more of this.
And you can attend via teleconference or be here as well. So people that can't drive here can do it over the teleconference as well.
Jeff, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
I just had a question. Where's the state of the
It's not. It's just. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Clarified.
I think that would be a good idea, but there again, we're looking at a bylaw change, and you know.
I don't think you need to. It could be in your rules and regulations that the board votes on. It's been a standard practice for years now, but it does need to be written somewhere so that it's complied with and well, whatever you adopt as far as a change to that practice.
Well, why don't you make? So why don't you modify your motion to include that we put this in the rules and regs?
Okay. That I make the motion that any board member that does not attend three or more scheduled board meetings during a year forfeits their assessment waiver, and that we add that amendment to the rules and regulations.
And the whole description, the whole thing about it, the whole thing about having dues waived.
Oh.
She said that.
Yeah, forfeits their assessment waiver.
You're saying that he forfeited me for the whole year, the whole $470,
sure.
I think it is, or we want to do it, divide it by 12 for each meeting.
Just the whole year.
The whole year.
Mm-hmm. I think you've missed that many meetings. You're really not involved.
It's probably a little more incentive.
Yeah.
Is three, a little more discussion, is three sufficient, or is four?
Well, like last year, we only had
seven or eight meetings.
Yeah, so three is almost half.
Yeah. Does everybody feel comfortable with that? That's good, John. Okay, then there's been a motion. Is there a second to the motion? John?
No.
Board members, all in favor, please raise your hand. All right.
What?
Very good. Okay, let's get into the financial reports then. Hey, Jody. What? Yeah.
So as
December when the rules are trying to go out.
As of this come, as of this calendar, yeah.
Okay, so for the financials, we're doing really good this year. The one thing that's good about having a hot topic on our ballot for the annual meeting is that we get a bunch of assessments that haven't been paid up so they can vote. So we've collected almost 3% over what we anticipated that we would have for the year income. And also with that, when they're paying off past due assessments, we get more interest money too. So we've gotten good little jumps on those coming in. Reservation fees are up this year despite rumors that the reservations were down because of the pay-for-play plan. And anyone still having any questions about the pay-for-play plan, say that back three times. And I asked Dan after the last meeting when we did the, put together the cabin analysis report. That is on the website now, and so is the cost analysis for it. Let's look at that way. So they can go on the website now and check that if they have any questions about that. All in all, our total income for the year is 2% over what we projected, and it's right on track for where we thought we would be. Okay, a little bit about the expenses. Gets a little oozed here. The cabin maintenance and supplies is about $250 over what we budgeted for, and I only anticipate about $200 more going to restock the cabins, and we all had a conversation last night about that, so they're full aware. So another couple hundred dollars on that category, and that's pretty close. Earlier in the season, a couple meetings ago, I stated that we were going to be way over in fuel by estimating monthly through the end of the year. Well, we came to find out that there was some that were in QuickBooks. There's different categories for different parts of that. They were not put in the right categories or split wrong. So Linda took the month and went through and adjusted some of those things. And we're okay now. We're a bit less than I originally thought, and we're on track and still spending up under what we projected for the year. So our fuel budget was $14,100. We're currently at
$8,300. Are you referring to one of these two things? Or just a general topic?
I just took numbers off the last P&L.
Okay.
So they're all in there, but I'm kind of like not making reference to it. I'm just taking the numbers.
This is no current.
I took that one that you just sent. Okay, so we're... The balance of $5,800 is what should get us through the end of the year, and I'm hoping that's sufficient.
Right.
I'm thinking again. Okay, and we're about $355 over our $3,000 legal budget, and that was due to help needed to resolve the ranch water agreement. And I anticipate us going to about $5,000 for the year end. We're also over normal printing and postage this year due to extra mailings being sent in response to damage control of the unofficial ballot request that was sent out to the membership. To help with that damage control, we had to make two more mailings. So that cost everybody more money again. That was about $2,000 over what we had planned to spend in printing and postage. And I think we still want to do one more newsletter. So that's going to put us up another 100, 400. Okay. So then we're going to be way over in that category for the year. You'll notice that we're showing over $4,000 over in the roads this year, but $5,000 in that category will be recategorized into water resources under the water catchments and diversions to cleaning out Half Moon Reservoir and the drainage. So, Linda, we need to switch that over. We've had a lot of water damage to the roads this year from the rain, but right now the road costs are just squeaking under the $15,500 budget, and I expect we might run a little bit more than that towards the end of the year, depending on if we get any more rain. Is it supposed to be over? Who knows? So anyway, and that's about the overages. We're also have some categories of the saving money this year. One being the livestock and agricultural category. Thank you, Leland. So we're like $5,900 over under here. So with that that extra money and the assessment extra money and the interest collected, we're still going to do well at finishing out the year. We have about $47,000 in the bank right now, and I did a quick little estimate of where we should be by the end of the year, and we should finish, I'm going to say low, I'm going to say $10,000 in the black to move over to next year. I think it's a little, no. If everything goes status quo, we should have $16,000, but we know things here are not status quo. So I'm thinking we'll probably have $10,000 to move over to the budget next year. I have put together, when we start talking about the budget and redoing the budget for next year, I kind of go back. I've been doing this since 2010. I take the actuals from the profit and loss statements of what we've actually spent, and then I do an average of the last 3 years. And I just keep adding on the new year and doing another average. I've done that already for this year for what I anticipate we're going to end up in with each category. But for next month's meeting, we'll really need to have, what I'll do then is I'll have another form filled out. Right now I can give you ideas on where I think we're going to end categories if anybody needs to know that on a particular category. But for next month's meeting, I'll put it in a different spreadsheet. Well, I'll actually take, like Leland will say, I'd like to see if we can do this next year. Here's what I intend that it should cost. So I need numbers on what you think it's going to cost so I can plug it in there. And if every person that's in charge, or board member, every board member that's in charge of their categories can figure out their approximate cost for these items, then I can put them in the spreadsheet and we can go through them as we sit there, and I can give us the bottom line that day, because we'll just punch numbers in until we find a balanced budget. Sometimes we run into areas like, it might take more than a month to finish, but then we have December. And that can also be done via email. We can, change my number of this, or let's get rid of this, or reduce this, or increase that. It's just a couple keystrokes in the Excel program, and we can find out where we're at. So I do encourage, and I really want you guys, all the department heads, to look at what you want done. Give me bring a ballpark cost. It would be really nice to have those before the meeting so I could plug them in before our actual sit-down budget meeting, and then we'll have a better idea where we're at.
So can you send each board member, when you've done that averaging, before he, so?
Sure, and, sure. Okay, so you want, I'll send all... all you guys the 3-year average so that you can look to see. But now, Brent brought this up a couple years ago, and someone else did too. And I think it's a good point. What we've been doing for the last 3 years doesn't necessarily mean that's what we should be doing for the next 2 years or 1 year. But it sure gives us a baseline to go from. But it could be out of whack. So if we need to change it, we can change it. And we have good people in place that can figure out what needs to be changed. So it's just a baseline. Consider that. And so I'll send you what has been spent. And then if you need to know when I give you your totals, well, it is broken down pretty good. But if you need any further individual numbers from different categories, subcategories, let me or Linda know. We can get you that information from the finances.
I have included last year's budget. You all have a copy of this year's budget. What we actually budgeted for this year. So we should have a single sheet that has that on it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the budget versus actual.
No. I mean the 2015 final budget. Might be like 5 pages long, but... you gave them out. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No problem.
So the single sheet.
Yeah, that's it there.
Okay.
So that's a good reference.
Why don't you go ahead and take a minute and explain that, then.
Oh, that's the budget that we worked up for 2015, if you have, and there's a copy here if you all want one. I'm going to grab one because I can't get my fingers on it. It's the budget for this year.
The single page on Linda, right?
Overall budget overview, yeah. In each department, in each area that functions on the ranch. So it just kind of gives you an idea of what we figure we'll be spending on for 2015, which is where we're at the end now. And then that's where the budget versus actual is, which is the other one, is what we have actually spent in those areas. So.
Any questions about the financials? Can I explain that okay?
Yeah. Thanks, Jenny. So it'll be a kind of a daunting task, but we've got to accomplish it next month. Yeah, finalize that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where we had it last time in November?
What if January
was? At the end of this meeting, let's talk about where we're going to have. Well, we could do it right. What we tried to do last year is there are a number of members that live in Vegas. There are a number that live in St. George. We haven't talked about going to Salt Lake or anything, but and we usually in the wintertime can have a meeting in Kanab so that the members that are living in Kanab area can attend more easily. And so last year we had a meeting at Joe and Candy's place in January.
St. George in March.
Was it in March? At my place.
And I contacted those members that were in that area to let them know that the board meeting was there so they could come if they wanted to. I think you had some.
They did. They had some members. So, what are your feelings?
Well, as for me, Vegas is a good spot. I'm in Quartzsite, Arizona for the next 6 months after November. Starting in November, I'll be down there for 6 months. I care, so Vegas is easier than coming here, of course. I was on the board the last time. I came from California to Kanab for all the meetings, some of them. But Vegas is a lot easier. I wouldn't expect anybody to come any further south.
So we'll probably have a meeting in November and December. In November. And December,
we get it all done in November. You don't miss it.
We were able to skip that last year.
Yeah, we skipped December last year.
And I can't remember if we had one in January.
January is Vegas.
In February. Maybe in March if you're close.
Okay.
April got out here.
Okay. So what about next month? Why don't we meet in Kanab? And then tentatively in January?
We still do it in our house. Let's
go to Las Vegas. Thank you, Candy. February. Yeah, so March, I'd be happy to have it at my place in St. George. April. Let's have it here or in Kanab if the weather's really bad, if we have unusual snows or whatever. Then we'll go from there.
Okay.
Okay.
Tuesday, the second Saturday.
Do you want dates? I just figured them all.
Yes.
November 14th, December 12th if we have one, January 9th in Vegas. February 13th is President's Day weekend, so I don't think that's probably a good one. And then March is the 12th, and April is the 9th.
Can we look at a time? This year we've been doing in the afternoon, 1 o'clock, or sometimes we've done them at 10. So whatever fits, what does the board think about time?
I like the
mornings.
Mornings, afternoon.
Well, I like afternoons when we're at the ranch because it's time in the morning to do stuff that we're going to do. But at when we go to Vegas or St. George, I'm like, I don't know.
Morning's good with me.
Mornings are good, I think, at these outside areas. So we'll do it at 10.
And from November 14th is the 11th is Veterans Day, so that's on a Wednesday. That shouldn't affect the meeting any.
Okay.
December, just skip it, and then January 19th is my holiday. That's as far as my calendar goes.
So we're looking at
November 14th, 8 p.m. Do you want to
answer? Yeah, you're an hour difference.
Okay.
I'll have that in a minute, and then I'll make sure that Sam posts the preliminary
meeting time. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like it to be 11 later, right?
Okay, items.
Yes, Vince.
Before you guys move on,
yes.
I usually try to post just a tentative schedule. I'm not asking for times, just places and dates. So could you guys review what you just talked about real quick so I can get it down?
Okay. Yes, go ahead, Jeff.
November 14th in Kanab at 10. December 12th, we're going to try to not do. January 9th in Las Vegas at 10.
Vegas time.
February 13th, we're going to try not. March 12th. St. George at 10. I'm sorry. That's on the 12th at 10. April 9th at the ranch or in Kanab at 10.
Okay, I won't post times. I'm not going to nail you guys down that much. I just want to let people know who might have a free hour or two if they want to get involved, that it's on that particular day, and we'll final up the times, you know, like we usually do a couple weeks beforehand.
Okay.
Kanab meetings
will
most likely be at
Prairie Lodge. Okay. Kanab meetings at Prairie Lodge. Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
Out there at Prairie Lodge, you hear that?
I know. I need to connect with them.
All right. If you look at your agenda, we don't really have anything new on legal. So we're going to skip 7, 8, 9, and 10, unless any of you individuals in your areas feel you have something you need to present to us right now. We're going to go on to water resources and a very important discussion we need to have. I want to thank the Water Committee and Barry's input and a lot of work and on everybody's behalf. I read that thing a time or two, and I could definitely tell Barry had his hand in there.
That was nice little...
Everybody had their hands in there. Many times.
Yes?
Well, who is the water
committee? Let's see. Do you want to state... Okay, I'm going to turn it back over to Jody. She's the Water Committee Board Representative. So, Jody, why don't you state
that? So, I'm a little bit confused on that myself. Our typical Water Committee was myself, Brent Fulmer, Vance Green, Robert Allen. I'm going to forget people.
Barry.
No, this was before. I'm not sure if this is like a special water committee right now that we've got going.
No.
They're all the same? Because after this is over, I don't think Barry's going to be on the water committee anymore, probably.
Why not?
It seems I would.
Okay. The current.
And then Mark Rowley. And Dirk. And Joe Bose and Paul and who did I miss?
That's everybody.
Okay.
So I consider this as a working committee and
thank you. I
thought we just like a special committee for this one function and then go back to normal whatever we're doing after that.
That's the pleasure of the board. I anticipated to work on this and finish this and work on other things through the year.
I think because I would propose they've proven themselves to be capable. They've gotten this job pretty well done in a short amount of time. I commend them. So, Jody, I think we should maintain that. Maybe you can, in the minutes, Candy, make sure you get the official list. Okay. All right. All right.
So, basically, after the last meeting, We tried to pass the resolution during the meeting on the ballots for the change in the water agreement. We know that there needs to be a change. So there was still some discussion about that following the meeting. And that's when the new water committee was put together. And so we've been working over the phone and email during the last month, trying to get a new agreement. And we've been working on that all month. So, I believe all the board members received.
Line muted.
A couple weeks ago, two or three weeks ago. And hopefully you've had time to read it and put any feedback and input into this so we can see where the board wants to go with it next.
Hang on a second.
Sure.
Vance, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
It's a muted conference. Muted. I don't know what to do.
Hang on. I'll take care of it.
Right here it says we're still connected.
Vance, are you there?
Did that to me on the last got about this far into the meeting and it just shut me down. The counter's still ticking that we're connected.
We're connected, but it's muted, so you can't hear us anymore.
I don't know how we might have muted our
line unmuted.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It happened on your end, but or else it was just a total error, but continue.
Okay. That was kind of weird, Vance. It went off and came back on by itself. So anyway, so that's where I'm at. We sent you all the paperwork. You guys were supposed to review it to give us your feedback and your input. So I'll turn it to the board now for their input if you want to go down the line or how you want to fulfill or...
Okay, we'll just take it as you have questions. I had a... So right here, I kind of under it. My question was... on the conveyance issue. It says, at the time, the association will prepare a quick claim deed and a report of conveyance to the member to transfer said water right to requesting member.
Tell us what page you're
that's,
on. That's... What paragraph?
Number 12, water right. The third paragraph in the middle. My question is a general question, and I'll give you my example specifically. Way back when I put together a little water system and I applied to the state and got the 1.75 or whatever, 7.8 or whatever, and I had drilled my well and put together a group of people, and then I requested of the board, because I'd read the bylaws, you know, I wanted to change the point of diversion from my 0.45 into my well. I had the well grouted, the state registered approved water source, all of that stuff. But at the time, the board was a little confused on where I was in that process, and for whatever reason, kind of was said, you know, denied at the time. And so I went ahead and I proved up on my well and water right and usage and all of that. But it kind of put a kibosh. The plan was each lot owner was to transfer that water right, in, you know, change the point of diversion. So we had all of that water possible to get out of that well. So that was never done. So my question is, the way these are written, Gary, if somebody is able to get the standard issue, so to speak, from the state, are they discouraged from then asking the ranch to give them their 0.45, or can they still get their 0.45 on top of that, the way this is written?
It doesn't address it. In my opinion, and I don't know where everybody else sits, then each member, there's a 0.45 that the association holds that, from the beginning of the grant, was to be allocated. So I don't see any problem with somebody getting their own water right and then also being allocated a portion of the association right, change the point of diversion to wherever your well or spring or whatever you're getting. But it's not addressed in that. That's really related to the water system itself. I wouldn't see any problem, and there's nothing in there that would prohibit a member from getting their water right from the state and then saying, in addition to that, I'd like to request from the association the 0.45, especially if they're going to use it on their own property or contiguous private property, then the association really, other than making the conveyance, has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
I think we have a member here that has that, too. They have the 1.73 from the state and their 0.45.
Okay, good. That was my one question. The other question I didn't notice in here, on my little water system, every member has, we have a meter, and for, you know, kind of equalizing out pumping costs or whatever, it reads, again, I know this is talking about an individual or private water thing, but there's a meter showing usage. But I didn't notice anything in here on where we're using Ranch Association's water. We talk about them being able to use their 0.45 or whatever. But I don't, and we talk about a ground wire where it crosses association property, I think, trace wire. But it seems like there needs to be some kind of accountability of just how much water, like if we're talking about Middle Canyon Spring then, how much water is running through that system, you know? I don't know that we're, I think there needs to be some accountability, and the only way I know to do that is, and 0.45 is a lot of water, you know.
Well, that's also culinary water only.
I don't know that it is culinary only, does anybody know that? Is it culinary only?
That's not agriculture.
The 0.45?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's required by the state for our residents to have full-time use.
That's for full-time use, but we're up here designated as generally seasonal use.
Well, it's a practical matter. It's going to be seasonal use up here. But
yeah.
In order to qualify, get a building permit, and some of those things, you have to say, I've got 4 or 5 acre feet available to have this full-time dwelling. And otherwise,
so the question is, what are the ramifications of, am I Chicken Little worried about the sky falling, or do we need, in fact, to know how much water is going through that from association water into a system? It seems like we would need to know that. I'm just opening that up for discussion. I'm not sure of the best solution there. No, in fact, they don't use this at all. Drink now and again. But I think, my answer to your question is no. But we're taking association water and we're agreeing whatever their plan is and for how many members and their 0.45 or whatever that they're going to be able to get from that. I think not. They can do whatever they want in their own water thing with the meters or not for individuals, but as a whole, as a group that applies to use our common water resource, maybe the capacity, like in Meadow Springs, greatly outweighs the probability. But what is done with that water? I don't know that I'm talking about that particular system, but could somebody take, just keep drawing water day and night, and selling it or using it or, you know, abusing it somehow? Am I worrying about something that doesn't need to be worried about?
If you're using this by the 0.45 by the state.
Right.
Okay. If you're overusing that, then the state already has the rules in place to take care of overuse.
But how do they know if you're overusing it?
They come and do an evaluation. They do it all the time.
Well, I think on that, I think we should probably know first, and I'm all for either metering. If it's going to be association water source, I think we do need to have a meter to see what's coming out of the main source. Now, whether the individual lots on that same system are metered or not, I'm in favor of that. So if we do have a problem, we know where the problem is, but it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be that way. But I think it would be definitely to protect that water source from overuse or misuse, I think it has to be on the main system.
For example, this system down here, there's a meter. So when I'm pumping water, I meter the water that's going into the tank. And then each system, that each line that's hooked up has a meter in a box. So everything's kind of metered. And that's really, I mean, if I'm pumping so many hours and I'm only getting so many gallons, I can see, and I can also see who's using what water, you know, from this point in time to this point in time.
Well, that's all well and good for our usage to govern those things, but I'm talking about...
We have numbers to that system, our meters.
I know what you're saying, but to meter it...
Doesn't a meter also help you know if there's a leak or if there's just an open-ended pipe going somewhere or there's breakage in their pipes and it's going down in the ground? That's why I think a meter is important for reasons like that. Before it divides off into anything, just what is flowing into the system? John?
I think I'm understanding what Phil is driving at here. And I don't want to want-F this thing to death because you can do that and get no place. Of course, people working on water systems on their own property, they can pretty much do what they want. But if it's association property, and we got all this membership out here, and let's say that every member out here used is a 0.45 acre feet. Would there be enough water in the system to have not to supply all of that? That would flood it. But if we have somebody that hooks to the system and using it, somebody's overusing it, would it at some point, if people really started using it, would it deplete the water supply so much that not everybody would get their 0.45? And if you have a meter out there, if somebody was using it somehow, and I don't know how they would do it, but if they did, a meter would say, somebody here is using too much, and we might be taking from somebody else that's on the system and not have enough water. I don't know if we have enough water here for 4.5.
It's been questioned in the past, too. But the whole thing, a meter isn't all, compared to the whole general system, isn't that expensive.
No, they're...
Right. $1,000.
I mean, the meters... Go ahead, Ben.
Well, let's bring everybody up today, just so you understand. In our group discussions over this, over metering or not metering, we were trying to put together a document that would pass muster with the membership. Okay? Now, I'm in the middle on this thing. I personally think that a meter would be a good idea, but I also know that there are other ways to calculate the amount of water that's being used. Pipe size, pump size, there's a plethora of ways to determine if it's being used or being overused. You don't necessarily have to have a meter on it. Now, if I'm in the city and I'm on a water system, they're going to want to know how much water I'm using and charge me for it. But here we could relatively easily estimate if they're overusing the amount of water. Anyway, as part of these discussions, Dirk, who has extensive experience being with the Kane County Water Conservancy District, he talked about the unreliability of meters. And I don't have enough experience to say one way or the other where they are. I think that the meter we have on our system here is pretty accurate, and we haven't had any problems with it, but we haven't measured that either. We don't know. We're assuming that it's fairly close.
But if you had to question it, then you could use these other methods to test.
Well, exactly. What we were attempting to do, and I don't mean to speak for
you,
is that we were trying to put together a document that's going to pass muster with the membership.
You mean be popular enough to pass?
I'm sorry?
You mean be popular enough to pass voting?
That's what we're talking about. And so
part of the discussion, once again, I was completely in the middle. Part of the discussion was, or part of the group was saying, look, if we meter it, it's not going to pass. The other part of the group was saying, well, I'm not comfortable if it's not metered, because we don't really know how much water's going in. And this is just my opinion, for whatever it's worth. I think that if we are going to put together something that's going to pass muster with the membership, then if we identify a problem, I mean, me personally, I'd like to get this thing passed. If we identify a problem, there's no reason we can't come back and say, hey, you appear to be overusing the system. You put in a 6-inch water line, you know, to feed 3 lots. All of a sudden we see you, growing your crops of marijuana on your property, and we're a little concerned about that. Or
a 200,000 gallon water tank call full.
There's lots of ways that we can do this. Now, admittedly, we can't, judge if there's a break or something in the line. I just use the potable water system as an example. There are often, they've had many problems with their system. And one of the big problems is when that system breaks at a certain point, anybody down from there is out of water. Is that correct? Okay. And so their method is whoever's got water, at that point in time, after that, there's a break from that point down. Okay. I'm not making the case for metering or not for metering. I'm making the case to get a document out in front of the membership that'll pass muster. You guys, and everybody can decide whether or not it will. Personally, if it was me, we have a way to find out if this is going to go out, if this is going to pass muster with the membership. We send it out, we either send it out and have it rejected, or send it out and have it approved, or we send it out with addendums to it and say, would you prefer to have meters on this thing? If not, whatever. But we need to get something done, because I've been dealing with this thing for 4 years. I mean, going on 5 years. That's too long to make a decision.
Well, let me just point of order the board to take a vote and decide what to do. And, I mean, you're assuming that we are going to send it out.
One of the things that I was saying, I was telling Jody, is that there's multiple levels on this thing. You guys now have to decide if you like this or if you don't like it. Yeah. Then you're going to have to send back to us, meaning the members of the Water Committee, suggestions on how do we change this. Now, I give nothing but credit to Barry for all the work he put into this. It was an incredible amount in the world. Well, he does this stuff all the time, so maybe it's not that hard. In the world of Brent, it was an enormous amount of work. I looked at it, and I'm pretty happy with it, okay? But then again, I am not making a case for metering or not metering. If you guys have these concerns, send back specific concerns. Let us address it. If you can't come to a commonality, common ground on this thing, then let's send it out to the membership and let them decide.
Well, I think that's another point. Right now we're just talking about our concerns, and that was just one of my concerns.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that we should have a meter on any water source. USROA water source has a meter on. Then used to a neighborhood water system, they can determine whether they want meters on their own.
True.
I put it off the association water source meter, so we can tell what's being taken out of it.
Or if potentially there's a problem, like a break, and they're not aware of it or something.
So I think we add to number 15 proposed new bylaw where it says instruction number 11. Fire and meter. and Water Association of Ohio.
Sure. We don't need to.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Not their individual people in their water system, but just
the water source.
Yeah. Sure.
Yes, our water source priority.
Listen, my take on it is I agree. And the reason I agree, I worked for Luxor Hotel for 19 and a half years. Believe it or not, we were supplying a 24-inch pipe of hot water on one day. To cheap from their construction to build their hotel. Our system was that big. 6-7 years down the road, somebody comes up with, hey, we're losing 10,000 gallons of water a day of hot water. If it wasn't for a meter, they never would have found it because it wasn't coming to the surface. It was going into everybody's underground water system for your wells in the neighborhood. So you have to have a meter to show at least we're not wasting assets of the science which water is. If it's on your own property, you waste what you want, I guess. But we need a meter. If we wouldn't have had a meter, we probably would have lost, you know, 2,000, then 4,000, then 6,000. They didn't catch it until we lost 10,000 a day. Then it took them 2 months to find it because it wasn't coming up. It was going down. So we need something to show us where to look to give us a golden map of how to find it.
I think that this is going to be a public water system. It has to have a meter on it. And it's going to be certified by the state.
I don't know the answer to that question.
They check our vault, and they check our, you know, backflow preventer, and they check the meter, and they, you know, all of that. I'm pretty sure it has it. The system itself has to.
Anybody on the water committee know the answer to that question?
Well, I have one of the questions. It's 2.5 feet deep. When I built my foundation, the state said the freeze in my area at 7,000 was three feet deep. So, you know, maybe we should adjust that to 3 feet deep if it's above a certain altitude and what is that if it's below.
It already says that you've got to comply with the building code.
Okay.
So it already covers the 3 feet in your frost area or
left. They said I had to go down 3 feet from my foundation.
We're just saying a minimum of 2.5 feet as a general rule. You may have to go deeper.
Okay.
Back on the meter, the members that I... I'm in contact with, and otherwise I just don't think it'll pass if it requires a meter.
What's the objection to the meter? The cost?
Well, the cost. Dirk wrote up quite an extensive explanation of what his concerns were with the meter. But cost, maintenance, extra. There are problems with meters on a regular basis. And we're not using any water at this point as far as that goes. And so... to add an extra cost and hassle of installing it and then maintaining it and then reading it. And who's going to read the meters? It's something that I think will cause, unfortunately, we can negotiate on a lot of things, but on this, it's either a meter or not a meter. It's black and white. And I think if it requires meters, it won't pass.
Just a question. For the members to consult the board, have a say in
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Whatever this water is coming from.
It's been there forever. It just hasn't been used. Yeah. We're not pumping it. We're not using it.
But the association put it in.
No, it's natural.
And these rules we're talking about are to apply to all members of all areas, whether you're going to drill a well or whether you're going to use a string. We're trying to come up with some rules so that it's clear to somebody, this is what we need to do and this is what's fair so everyone is treated equally.
Yeah.
Larry, let me ask you a question. You mentioned you didn't think it was passed. The muster with the membership, if meters were required. It might not if everybody out here had to have a meter. But I think we're talking about a meter from, if a water source is not there that was going to supply 6-8 people. It'd be 1 meter.
I understand. We've had that discussion for a week now.
Yeah. And I understand.
Now it's been 2 weeks.
And I'm asking out of ignorance because I don't know.
Yeah, we discussed initially with the proposal that we put meters on each user. That was negotiated and give and take, and there were several compromises made in different areas in the document as we went through it. The final consensus, if you will, was that certain people wanted to make sure that there was at least a master meter on each system that draws water off the association property. Mm-hmm. There were those of us that said, no, the meter's going to kill the deal. So that's where we got to. We discussed all the possibilities, and I understand that the discussion evolved from, we're not, at least I don't think, we're requiring or even discussing requiring separate meters on each user in the system.
No,
that's up to
no.
the water system to decide,
yeah.
like on the bill system. You can do whatever you want to determine who uses. So somebody's not taking water from somebody else on the same system. The question is do we have a meter to determine how much water is actually flowing out of the association source into the system?
And the state requires that you have to do it regardless of what
the state doesn't
right?
require.
I understand the state doesn't. I'm not required, but I, even as a way to find, as Joe said, a leak, or potentially. Okay, well,
from my past experience, the water engineer, when I tried to, you know, comply with what the state wanted, it wasn't what the state, but the water engineer said, these people, when you move 0.45, change the point of diversion, they're going to have to show to prove up, they're going to have to show usage.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, now how do you show usage? I mean, if they unless you have a meter to measure, that was his point, man. That's why we put meters on each one, so they have to individually prove up that, yeah, they did indeed use this water.
Water rights are proved up, and most of the water rights on the ranch that exist right now all been proved up without a meter. The state uses a different methodology on use.
But on water systems?
On water systems. That's basically what we got from Dirk. I mean, I rely on Dirk a lot since he's got years and years in the Conservancy District. And he was the one, you know, I was right there. I'll tell you right up front, I'm not in favor of meters. And he was right there saying, you know, this is unnecessary and it's going to cause problems. So...
Hmm.
Well,
this here already has a meter.
Yeah.
Well, this has
the
a meter.
The one
user on the system has a meter.
No, but irrespective of that, if you went down the canal and tried to build a house, you'd have a meter.
Yeah. Huh. Because you only have one source of water. Here, you can drill your own well. You can go to an association.
But if you drill your own well, you don't need a meter. Unless you want to put it on.
Right.
Your association using association water.
Right.
You've got 300 other lot users who are saying, okay, you're taking water out of the association ground for your water system. How much are you taking?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's
so,
like,
so do we have a meter on the upper cabin system? No. In fact, we're going to require new people to come in with a meter.
But that was built first.
That's not an upper system either.
Well, things are changing.
We're not talking necessarily about proof systems. I mean, whether the water company themselves, but this water user group decides to do fully approved the culinary water system or just a mutual water company, that's not something that the association has or should get involved in.
The upper water system is fine.
I know.
Right. It's not to individual members. It's serving just the cabins that are there. So
that's all the more reason why, if you're serving the public, you're having members stay there that are assuming that everything's good. That should be a higher level system than me putting in my own system that's going to serve me and my neighbor.
But except for the, if there was a leak or something, there would be no reason to meter those unless we had a private family say, hey, we want to hook onto that system now. Then I could say, well, then we need to do the meter.
What you're saying is it's not certified. That system up there is just a system that's using water out of the ground, pumping up to the tank, and it hasn't been certified.
Right.
That's exactly what most of these water systems are going to do.
Okay.
Okay,
think it's
how much would it be on the cabin water store? Because I think any water there's a size pipe. There's not a question.
And I guess what I'm hearing is like they're placing questions the accuracy of meters, but I think that's if they have a city full of meters measuring things, they're going to have problems with them.
And when you're looking at the Water Conservancy, you're looking at kind of the financial component also. You know, when it comes down to meter and water to get, you know, pay per gallon per resident, you know, it comes down to, you know, nickels and dimes because it costs money. But when you're just, you know, hey, we just want a meter just to kind of get a rough estimate, you know, you're not talking about dollars. You're just talking about numbers. You know, I understand that. I've talked to Kirk about it, and I know Mark Fisher. I've gotten certified with some guys with the state, and, you know, they spend a lot of money on those meters, and it's all about dollars coming back. And so when you're looking at 0.5, gallon times 30 days, it's all dollars and cents when it comes that way.
Well, what does the meter cost anyway? $500?
Depends on the size of the pipes, I think, and the size of the meter. I think it's probably from, I don't know anymore because this has been 10 years ago, and back then it was like, I don't know, it was like $800 or $1,100 for the meters we bought. I'm not sure if I remember even, but I doubt it'd be more than $2,000 to put a meter on this system. Do you have any feel for it? And $2,000 seems insignificant to all the engineering and the other things.
What size pipe
is it? 4-inch pipe.
4-inch.
Is that system 4-inch coming out of the?
Well, Dale's one end up on the science line. That's on a 4-inch line. It's a big sucker. It's about that big around.
A meter?
Okay, well, let's...
wasn't a meter.
Let's do a little focus here. Let's take one more question, and then I want to focus.
What's the maintenance?
I haven't had to touch them.
Yep.
Well, there's no corrosion.
I haven't inspected them, but they all work.
I have to turn everything off and I get out and kind of clean the rotor off. That's it.
It's minimal.
I've been married 45 years. I've had a water meter on every house I've owned. I've never had a repair on any of them. So,
well,
that's only a water.
Well, again, it's noted the efforts of the Water Committee and noted that evidently there's a division on what's felt here, and I'm sure in a sense you're speaking for Dirk and you, and it probably involves the Clarkson connection, which so there's a couple of issues here. One, as I see it, the Water Committee is supposed to be, make recommendations to us, which they have. Very good one. I mean, I have very few questions about this. That was one of them. I'm not sure I understand the first come, first serve thing exactly.
Yeah, that's one I don't understand.
And maybe we'll have a little explanation on that. Short of that, our duty as board members would be, yeah, I think we all have the feeling. That's why we wanted to put it up for a vote with the membership to try to get it as part of our legal documents so that different boards from year to year wouldn't go in and change this or that, you know. And that's the ideal. We have to decide, I guess, how strongly we as board members feel about a meter or not. And evidently, if we feel strongly about it, we can vote to make that the policy, you know, and make it part of the document, but we have to realize that it probably wouldn't pass, and we have to weigh that consequence. But as a single board a year, you know, we could say you have to do it, and so anybody wanting to build in this year would have to comply. So I don't know that we should ride roughshod over this agenda, because I want to take a straw poll. This is not a motion. I just want to see a feel of the board members. How many of you, by raise of hands, feel there should be a meter on as we talk? How many do not? Okay. So the majority does feel that way, but I don't want to make an emotional thing or make a got to have it this kind of a vote right now. I think we should do a little bit more homework, charge the Water Committee to absolutely contact the state and see if we have to have a meter or not. Chances are, from what Barry says, we don't. I'm from dirt, but I'd like to be absolutely sure. I'd like the Water Committee, those represent or know the people that don't want a meter, to tell them the feelings of this board. Yeah, we're kind of feeling like we should have a meter. And we're not going to have a yay or nay vote on this end today. Question?
What class was having a meter to?
That
cost and maintenance
is what they say. So maybe you could give us an estimate on what those two issues would amount to. Maybe we could take a closer look at that.
That would be good. And nobody's been charged for charge through that meter. I don't know what. If you think it's only the cost of the meter? Okay. You think it's only the cost of the meter, because we're not billing anybody through the meter. It's just there.
No, it's just the cost of installing, purchasing a meter and installing it and putting the box and, you know, the extra work there and then the maintenance of it.
And I think
nobody's being billed because it's their water, right? They have the right, especially where they pay the money to put in the system. But putting in the meter itself and the ancillary items that have to be there, that's the cost.
It's just in addition to the original cost of putting the
I understand.
And I think Barry brought up one other point was, okay, who's going to read that meter? And I think the answer to that would be pretty obvious that the association would once a year.
Well, I check the meters that we already have.
We would probably have, we would check those yearly and log it or keep track of it. Marcus?
Yeah, the people will be sharing.
Well, whatever, like this group, Metacanyon, the cost would go into their cost, which I don't remember the numbers.
Yeah, the shared cost.
Okay. So you're talking about master meters as an all point of association property.
Yes. Yes.
If you got six people on the system, that would cost about $400 a piece.
Yeah, we're not trying to regulate their water system or anybody else's, that they have each person have a meter. It's just so we know how much water's coming into their system.
I think it's worded really good like that, and it's very clear. I don't think that.
Okay, so I'll put that back to the Water Committee then to maybe let's do our homework just a little bit more. Let's discuss just a little bit more. Is there any other issue that people had with the document so far? Yes,
Beth? First service, just scary. I don't know.
Oh, there was one other thing, yeah.
I think you could clarify that, though. The water source only provides 600 feet, and you have 10 lots down there, and that amount of water can only provide for five.
Yeah.
How do you do it any other way unless you basically say, okay, this water source can provide for 5 lots.
Are you talking about the first come, first serve
yeah.
stuff?
That's the way I think. That's why it was written, is because if the water source only provides for 5 lots and there are 50 lots around it, that water source can't provide for all 50.
And so the first people who have come and using the volume right, that they're
the ones who want to put in the system and it's a
yeah. I agree with that idea. I think it's out the gist of your idea.
It was actually Dirk's idea, so I can't tell you exactly what he was thinking, but the idea is you have a small water source like Leaf Spring. It's not going to supply too many. So you can't really cut down every time somebody hooks in and say, okay, now you're down to 0.1 acre foot.
Yeah.
So it's whoever comes and puts the water system in, they can serve the number of lots that can be served. And everybody else that comes after is going to have to look for a different water source. That's the only way it works.
I've got input on that. I've got two different scenarios on that that need to be addressed in that. If we go with the first come, first serve. The first scenario would be you have a water source like Jeff was talking about, small one, and only will basically feed 5 different lots for the 0.45. That's the capacity of it. And so you have a neighborhood that's close by. Let's just hypothetically use Podunk. So you have one little system there that can feed 5 lots, but you've got 20 people there that want to go and get water from that source. I don't think, like, a group of people to convene together and go, hey, well, let's go get that water right on that right now and build that water system. We're not going to talk to the rest of the people in Podunk. We're just going to do it, and we're the first 5 here, so we're going to do it. I think that needs to be addressed in that statement.
So you're saying they need to talk to everybody?
Before we move on, that is addressed in that statement. Remember, whenever somebody comes and petitions on a water source, on a association water source, they have to send notice out to the people who are in that already in the
Okay.
area.
Okay.
They were putting in a water system. Then they have to give them 30 days of certified mail. And if they don't respond, or if they respond and say, no, I'm not willing to contribute, they have notice. So we've already addressed
That is in there.
Yeah, that's already covered there.
So then the second scenario would be, and this would be a personal one, and not that this is just because it's a good example. So we have 4 people that have priority or have water rights off of Leaf Springs now, and we put that together in the hopes that we would put that system over to 4 lots in Broad Hollow, and then our main dude that's going to do the construction dies, and then it sits there because we can't, and we have the financial crunch came through so nobody can afford it. So you're saying under those terms as well, if another group of people in Broad Hollow, even though I've already canvassed all of them to see if they wanted to participate.
They would have to re-canvass.
They would have to re-canvass the area and then send notice that, hey, we want to go ahead and develop that spring. But they would still be, if they applied for the 1.73 from the state, their priority would still be behind ours. So how would that work?
Well, I'm not sure that the priority works that way exactly. I mean, as far as you've got a water right that you petitioned for the state, right?
Mm-hmm.
You and 4 people own. Now, the association, somebody's going to say, that's on association ground,
mm-hmm.
okay? Just to clarify. Okay, so I come in, I buy a lot up there, and I say, I've got money right now, even though you haven't been able to in the past. I've got money right now, I'm going to put in a system right there. Guess what I have to do? I have to come to the association and say, I want to put in a system here, and I want to connect on 20 lots, and I've canvassed, and you say, I don't want to participate, so you're going to have notice by certified mail. Second of all, the association, you're going to say, they can't go there because I already have the water right there. I have first priority because we'd be moving water rights there. And so you're protected as far as somebody else coming in later. You get certified notice, first of all. Second of all, the board's going to have to look at that and approve their system, at which point in time they're going to look and say, wait, somebody's there already there in front of me.
Well, and would this at this point be a situation where the new people, let's just use you, you want to come in and you want to build, and you want to build the water system there. And then what happens to the first 4 on that? We're approached and we're saying, okay, yeah, we want to join in. What if adding us on is not in your, like, I know it would be a shared expense for everybody, but what if, say that source only held or fed 10 lots. Say you have 10 lots of your own that you want to put on there. What happens to the other 4 members that already have a water right there?
You're already first.
Yeah,
you're already in front of us. There's nothing. Whether the state laws say this or not, you're already in front of that water system. So that I think is taken care of.
Yeah,
Someone's going to serve so many anyway.
Well, right. We're talking about limited water sources, and there's lots of them. But bottom line is, if I came, then your water right's already there. That's your point of diversion. Then I'm going to say, I want to jump in there, too. And you're going to say, no. And if there's any question, you go to the state. They shut me down and say, no, we'll not approve a point of diversion change there. And you still have, whether you build your system or not, you still have use of that water. And we have to go drill a well or do something different. So that's already addressed.
Okay.
States can't give out more water rights than the already.
That makes sense.
Well, they can if you don't protest. If I went and applied for a change of diversion there, and you didn't say, hey, wait a second, there's a problem, you have the burden to say there's a problem, but they won't approve me as long as you do that. So nobody needs to.
Well,
the state will protect you, because the state will not protect you unless you protest. Or say, no, my water rights in first position.
That's yeah, and I've seen that happen where you can protest it and you can still lose on that protest. But I see your point.
The protest needs to be, just so you know, the protest needs, if you say there's insufficient water flow for us both to suck out of the same hole.
Right.
The state absolutely will uphold you.
If you
say, I have problems with what's going around the conveyances, the state will completely ignore you because they don't deal with that.
Right.
I think we've addressed.
Okay. One other issue on this was there was in there about buying or selling of water, or when somebody sold their lot.
Let me clarify that.
Yeah, that's a big one to me.
The idea what I put in there was, first of all, if you sell your lot, your water right goes with it. It's connected. That's not even in discussion. What I wanted to address is if I have two lots, I have one in, you know, if they're next to each other, it's not a big deal. But if I want to transfer, if I want to use more water on one lot, I would have the right to transfer as long as it's connected still to a lot. It doesn't leave the association. It doesn't leave the ranch. I could transfer a lot of water from one of my lots to another one of my lots so that I could have a house but also irrigate or something else. That's the purpose of it. And I know that's got, you know.
What about the buying and selling of the water?
Later, does it have the water rights come back?
No.
It's not. It's gone. Can you sell a lot in this county without water rights?
Yes.
Yeah. Happens all the time. And you can sell water rights, too, as real property.
So basically anybody, for the most part, right now, let's set aside the bylaws. Anybody that buys a lot of Deer Springs, for the most part, buys it without water. Okay? They have the right through the association, but the concern, I think, is if I transfer the water off of one of my lots to another lot, that leaves a lot without water, and I've already made my claim, as it spells out in there, I've already made my claim from the association, so I no longer have the right to claim from the association a new water right. But I still have the right to claim from the state, so it's really not an issue.
Unless the state closes the appropriation.
Well, yeah, if the state... The state could do a lot of...
Well, and we're already in the mode of restricting. I looked up their little map the other day online, and there's open basin, and then we're on the... I don't know if they call it restricted or something, but...
Yes, we're on the fringe.
Yeah, we're on the fringe right now, so like...
Yeah.
When moving water from one lot to another, though, this is culinary water you're talking about.
Yes.
You can't use culinary water at one unit, can you?
Yes. You can use water.
So you can add to it?
Culinary, it can be used for culinary or anything underneath it. So if I want to irrigate and grow corn, which doesn't make sense up here, but whatever. if I wanted to leave it as possible for people to do, and there are a lot of people who have multiple lots. So to be able to move, I think it's important for people to be able to, especially when their lots are in different areas, to be able to use their water rights and move them around. As long as they don't leave the ranch, as long as they don't leave, they always have to be connected to a unit, then I think it's important that we have that flexibility.
So we'll be able to sell that lot without the water then?
Yes.
Then would the new owners be able to get water? No.
They gotta go to the state just like we told everybody.
If it was still open, they could go to the state, which is scary.
They would just have to sell a lot at the reduced rate because of the water, right?
Whatever the due diligence
of the buyer buying.
We can't protect every buyer and say we are going to set up so that we teach each buyer what everything is. I had a new buyer that I didn't sell to, but I know them, and they said, well, we didn't help, you know, the cabin reservation fees and the per person thing. You're not going to be able to update every single person. I said, that's what the rules are. So you're not going to be able to protect everybody and say, we're going to guarantee that every lot has 0.45 acre feet unless you're willing to step up. We are going to guarantee that which I would never do. I would never suggest it.
Okay, let me give you a real life, I think, worry, maybe. So I understand what you just said. That makes sense to me, all of that, and the moving of the water. I understand that. Was there anything in here that would give anybody a right? Let's be open about, say, Dale, to go around and try to and get people to sell them their 0.45 acre feet of water.
That wasn't something that crossed my mind, but, yeah, there's nothing in there that prohibits any owner, as long as they have a unit in the subdivision, to go and say, hey, I'd like to buy your water. And just like there's nothing that prohibits me from saying, hey, I'll sell you my timber if you want to come cut the trees off my property or anything else. So, no, there's nothing in there.
Because in that case, who knows where that water would be used, you know, or how it would be used. Maybe it's still got to be tied to the ranch somewhere.
It has to stay in the ranch, and it has to be connected to a unit. So
I think the emotional feel is we hate to think of people of many lots in our association becoming devoid of water, in a sense, because somebody with the means or power or whatever goes out and convinces somebody to, in a short-sighted view, to sell their water.
Well, I don't think you can protect everybody from themselves.
Yeah.
But I have to say something about that statement. There's two things I have against this. First one is, yes, you're right. We can't protect everybody against themselves. But, however, as a board member, I feel like it's my responsibility to protect future people. I know that's bizarre to a lot of people, but that's how I feel about it. And I'm thinking, if someone sells off their water rights today because they're short of money, they need the cash, they're going to sell it off to whoever, I am not doing my job if I allow that to happen for the future member that comes in and buys a lot without water. I think that's bizarre to me. The second thing I have an issue with on that, which I just forgot. Wait. Well, to appreciate the land. Oh, I forgot. Number two, I'll think of it later.
Barry's point is that we can't protect.
Because a realtor can sell it without water rights, but do they have to tell the person who's buying it has no water rights, or can they just play dumb?
No, we would
be. So they have to notify them.
We've got a member with a question back here. Yeah.
I'm understanding the transference of these water rights. A unit. Is a unit defined as a individual's home, vacation rental, and rent for a hotel?
It's a 20-acre lot.
The lot. The ground.
No.
B&B?
Vacation rental by
residential
units. Oh, I remember number two. I worked with the Forest Department for 15 years running an outdoor outfitter company, and I always thought that the forest company was in place to protect our forest lands. And guess what I found out? It's not. They're there to protect the watershed and the water. And what I've learned from them over the years in doing this with them is that who controls the water controls the power. And I think if we think we have a problem now with one member having 52-plus votes, think of what problem we're going to have. We have one member have 52-plus water rights. And that's a concern for me. That's a real concern for me, Barry. Just being honest and open there.
I understand that, but doesn't that, well, I understand.
Right.
So I don't understand why you're concerned about, I mean, that person has 305 to begin with.
Yeah, but he doesn't have them now, so he put them between the membership where it needs to be, in my thought.
Just don't let me forget to talk about this, just for the Forest Service. We're in a period, it's been published in the paper for input on their burn policy or not, but anyway.
Marcus.
All of the petition on the water rights, this only pertains to the one well.
This is, we tried to come up with a document that will apply not just to this one particular system that's going to work, but for anybody in the future. Yeah. No. Okay. Well,
I have a question. Then, if they sell their 0.45 water, acre feet of water, that means that land has no water. They're not entitled to association land either. So that person can't come down here with a 300-gallon tank and say, I want to get it from down here at the ranch, or I can't get it up.
That's
here.
Right.
They don't get any
water. You have to haul it in.
You can't get any water. Your lot has none.
I think it says something about that in that document about.
Yeah, it does. It does.
They can't claim a new water right from the association. Yeah. We wanted to make sure that there was a limit so somebody didn't transfer it away and then leave that, and then they come and say, well, I don't have my water. I want another one from the. We don't want people to come back for seconds, so to speak. But as far as hauling water, if somebody wants to go into Kanab and haul it from there, or if they want to come here and pay to fill their tank, that doesn't have anything to do with water rights. It doesn't have anything to do with water systems. It's just a decision as to whether you want to sell water to people who don't otherwise have water, that want to haul.
Yes.
If I own all the property, should I change one of the water rights to a different point of diversion and combine them?
Yeah.
On property.
Yes, that's what he's saying.
Exactly what I put in
yes.
there. Now I can do that.
Huh?
Right now I can do that, right?
Yes.
Yes.
The law to the old thing.
They're actually, I don't think they're, right now, I don't think,
doesn't have water now.
I don't think it's clear on that.
Well, it doesn't say anything about it, so.
Yeah.
There's no prohibition from moving water from one lot to another or back and forth.
I could actually decide to change the point of diversion of one of my lots to the other lot, and that does not have any water.
Right.
Can't you sell that lot?
If you
didn't sell without water, I would have
those
on my.
That's right.
That's why I'm saying I don't think we're talking about 0.45, but at least currently, and it may change. But currently, you can go get the 1.75 or whatever. We're not leaving lots without water.
They're just gonna.
But we don't know that.
They're just gonna have to go. They're gonna have to apply for their own.
This works. Yes.
They could apply in
well, we had it earlier. You'd mentioned
that was still open for appropriation to basin.
From your own well, both the 1.78 or whatever.
1.73.
And the 0.45.
0.45. If you have your own well, why wouldn't, if you had the chance, why wouldn't you want to sell your 0.45?
Well,
you wouldn't want to do it for one reason. This is how much you get paid for here. This is how much you can prove up on with the state. Okay? Now, for example, in my case, I just recently proved up on my well. And I got 0.67 acre feet. Okay? And the only reason I did it, because his brother Ben wrote a nice little letter for me saying that I water some of the longhorns, which I do, from my well. But that's where I ended up. They took me from my 1.73 down to 0.67 acre feet. 0.67 acre feet is 18,000 gallons a month. A lot of water. And it's a huge amount of water. You know, because I'm not irrigating or not doing anything. But if I sold my property for, let's say I sold my 0.45 acre feet off, and somebody else came in and bought my property, and they go, oh, gee, well, we want to add this second residence, which we're allowed to. We want to irrigate this ground here. Okay. So they could prove up, they could essentially prove up on another 0.45 acre feet of water or more. And so there's nothing to keep me from doing it other than good sense. I'm not going to sell off my 0.45 acre feet because my property, at least in my estimate, has more value with that 0.45 acre feet attached to it.
Even though I have my own law.
Okay, Barry, I have a question for you.
Somebody else might not look at it.
Are we protected? Because if you change the point of diversion, you have so many years to prove up on that. In our review of a water system, we want to assure ourselves that there's some planning here, that they're going to be effective, that they're going to do that, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be effective, and they will be able to prove up. But in the past, you've had to drill a well and have the water, so it's a viable point of diversion. I guess I'm asking, is there a way for the association for that law to say they don't prove up? Is there any provision where the association can be involved and say, hey, you've got 30 days left to prove up, and you haven't proved up, or you're not going to prove up? If so, then the association has a right to take that 0.45 back before it's lost?
No.
Once you change the point of diversion, if you were wait until 6 months before, the association we could ride it up, so not that I agree with it, but we could ride it up so the association takes that water right back. The association would then have 6 months to prove up on that water right.
Yeah.
The association already owns probably, and I'm a water guy, but probably 15 or 20 times more water than they could ever use. Mm-hmm. So to take back a 0.45 acre feet and spend money out of the budget to prove up on it,
okay,
it's really
not a practical matter,
in my opinion.
Okay.
And the way our water policy is now is we normally wouldn't give that quit claim deed until they had the viable source. In the new document, it says when you apply for it, you get it, whether you already know it's a viable source or not, which I kind of have a little iffy on, but not enough to make a issue out of it.
Well,
if they could lose that.
They're going to come to the association with a plan saying, here's what we're doing, here's where it's going, those kind of things. It doesn't make money. It doesn't make sense to do a lot of that unless you have somebody may do it. It doesn't make any sense to do that unless you have a viable water source.
Let's hope.
Out there and just
let's
say,
hope.
I'm going to put in this water system and the water's going to just bubble up out of the ground. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, the people I talk to you would be surprised at how many think that way.
Well, if not water under every piece of ground.
No. Yeah. But they don't get that. They don't understand that, a lot of them. So.
Okay.
There's two other things on that I want to talk about.
I don't know if that's been a first right to refusal. If something is taken back, like whether you cleaned out the water rights, taken back if they didn't prove it up?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
First right of refusal, 30 days.
Yeah.
30-day clause.
The only 30 days is basically to give other people in the same area the opportunity to say, I want to participate or I don't want to participate.
Okay.
I don't remember anything about first right of refusal on that.
I'm going to have you think about this, because in a minute I want to take another straw poll to see if how the board generally feels about this thing about first come, first serve, and about the selling of water rights, just so we can give a little more input back to the water committee here.
Okay.
Anybody object to doing that at this point in time, or do you want to have more discussion?
After we're done, we can talk about that.
No, you can talk about other things. I just want to clarify these two particular points.
Yeah, I agree. Do that.
Yeah. So the first one would be, does everybody feel comfortable enough hearing the explanation of the Water Committee on the
first come, first serve
issue? So all of you that feel that you understand that sufficiently and can abide by their writing at this point in time, raise your hand.
Favor of it, you say?
Yes.
Okay.
That you can accept it the way it's written now.
The way it's written, yeah.
Okay, all those, they can accept it.
Explain to me that it's, if you're not.
With the explanation we've got. Raise your hand if you understand and can accept the way it's written so far.
I think I can deal with that.
Yeah? Okay.
Me neither.
Okay, so there's...
But not that I won't get there, I'm just not there yet.
So there's four, there's...
Well, now I feel comfortable.
Okay,
Kevin, there's only so much water in there.
Okay, so that's a majority so far, just this inclination of the four of us are these four right here. Okay.
John, Jeff,
me,
Leland, Phil.
No, me and... Well, Jody and Leland.
Jody and Leland are in favor. The rest are. Okay. So we're not making motions here. We're just getting a feel to give the Water Committee input on how we feel about this. Okay, so the second point was on a person's ability to sell their water right. Sell or transfer their water right. Is there any other discussion you want to take on this before we have a straw vote?
That's so long as the water stays on.
Still connected to the ranch.
Yeah. Okay.
I was weary of this. I'll say after hearing the explanation, I can see how we cannot control everybody in every situation. It's a nice idea, but I don't think it is practical or legal. So I'm going to vote in favor. So all those that can feel maybe not great in their bosom about the whole idea, but can see that it's a practical motion, raise your hand. Okay. Those cannot? Okay.
Believe in it, but I'm not convinced.
Okay, so we're a little torn on it.
Well, I feel I'm not sure, but I understand
it. Your question was, Phil, that all those who feel that people should be allowed to sell their water rights or not sell their water rights?
No. My question is, the way the Water Committee has written this, where water rights can be sold in the way that they are still connected to the ranch, the way that it's written, even though you might not think that is a great thing to do, and you wish you could regulate it, but if you feel like me that you can see that it's, you can't be accountable for everybody now and in the future, and you can't force something on them, can you see the clarification that Barry's given us? Can you say, okay, it's not a perfect world, but I can see that this is probably okay to have it written this way?
Do you need to read the statement?
No. The only reason I'm kind of against it, because there's too many people that own more than five lots. A couple that own 10 lots, a couple that own 5 lots, a couple that own 6 lots. That group of people could put a hurt on some other people in the long run. I'm kind of leaning against
it. Put a hurt on them by how?
Look, they're selling 0.45. Let's say that guy owns 10 lots and he does it on all 10 lots. Then 10 more people coming in can't get water. I'm like Jody. I don't want to what if it's a death, but I don't, as a board member, I don't want to destroy it for somebody down the road 5 years from now.
You're confusing the issue. The 0.45 is given by the association for each lot.
Correct.
They want to drill their own well and apply to the state and prove up on it, they can get 1.73, which is separate from the 0.45.
True. What if there's no water for a mile in their direction and they have to get it from an association spring? Now they can't get the 0.45 sack because they've given it away.
Okay.
Sure.
I understand that.
That's why I'm concerned with it.
But that doesn't prevent the other lots around them from drilling a well somewhere else and creating a system that brings the water down to that lot.
Well, and you're also on that premise still thinking that we're going to be open for appropriation for the next 100 years, and we're probably not.
I'm not 100% against it, but I'm not 100% in favor of it.
I think there should be a limit to how much they can move.
Meaning of the wind.
Leland brings up a point that maybe there should be a limit to what can be moved or what can be purchased. That's an idea.
Why would people want to buy an additional 0.45 acres if they're not going to use it for the additional which would provide water to the residents on those two on that lot?
And if they buy it, they've got to,
somebody's making a profit.
Well, maybe. What about this stipulation? If you try to buy the right of a lot's water, you have to have approval from the board, which means that they have a means of proving up on it.
the only reason I should think that someone would buy additional water rights to grow crops or to do something else. Or just
Or just make money. I agree.
And turn around and sell it for more.
Yeah.
But
we want to make money.
When you buy those water rights, Barry, when you buy those water rights, you're not talking about moving the point of diversion, right?
Well, they would have, once they own the rights, then they could petition to remove the point of diversion. I mean, that's between.
But until they need to, they don't have, right? Right. So whether they're trying to make money, prepare for the future, or have water for some grand plan of irrigation, whatever their reason, the way it's written now, they can do that. And what you're saying is, but we're worried about those people in the future that don't realize all of this, that come in, and now we got a bunch of lots here that are
worthless.
That's easily fixable. I was going to just listen to the comments and take it in. It's really easily fixable. All you do is you say, if somebody wants to transfer or sell a water right from a lot, then you require them to report at the county recorder's office a little one-paragraph notice that says the association has already transferred this water right, and so you're buying it knowing that that you can't get an association right. You're done. That way everybody has notice that lot no longer has an association right to sell it, allotted to it, or allocated to it. I mean, that if you're worried about people knowing what in the future that a lot does or doesn't, I don't like doing people's due diligence for them. They need to be smart enough to check. But if you wanted to report something,
well, that helps a little. But I think they're still worried about the fact that then we have lots where there is no water, and it's not a good thing.
If you carry that logic further, the person who bought that water right has now appreciated that lot, and they can go in and buy it at greatly reduced cost.
It's possible. That's all. There's a lot of water witness, aren't there?
That's a puppy.
Yes.
There's a statement right here, proposed bylaw number 12 in the fourth paragraph that says, any water right obtained from the association is and shall remain in separate connection with the units or units within the subdivision and cannot be sold or transferred except for the formal sale of the unit to a new owner or to other units within the subdivision association.
So that kind of clarifies it, doesn't it?
It's basically saying you can't take the water right. It doesn't say you can't move it from one lot to another, but it's saying that the water right is assigned to that unit.
Or units within the subdivision.
But then it says that you can't transfer except for the normal sale of the unit to a new owner.
Or to other units in that subdivision.
Does subdivision mean...
So,
does subdivision mean the subdivision of the ranch now, or does it mean the water system?
No, subdivision refers to Deer Springs. There's only one subdivision at the Deer Springs Ranch.
It almost seems like a conflict.
There are phases in the subdivision, but I didn't get into it. I wanted to make sure that the water stays on the ranch.
Okay, but we could make this very simple and just state that water right, the 0.45 acre feet, what do the chain have to be applied to from the association? So, in order to sell water right, you've got to have something in your hand that says, I own this water right, which is basically coming from the association.
And we wouldn't be giving it.
Once the association transfers the water right to me, there really is no piece of paper. It's a register at the state of Utah. And so, once I receive it from the association, I don't have to give the association's permission to do anything else. Transfer by deed or by assignment to somebody else. So there really is no physical thing that you can say, I have a water right or I don't. It's an annotation in a book.
Okay, that helps me, because then people can't just run out and go all over. Sell me your water right. They have to have gotten the water right, like you say. Right?
Well, no.
No.
I'm saying that the association transfers the water right. It's like transferring me a truck. I can then sell it to somebody else without getting permission of the association. If you put in the bylaws that on any transfer you have to get board approval, then they would have to come back and petition and say, we want to transfer this water right. But that doesn't address any of your concerns of leaving a lot without water. It doesn't really address anything other than just let the board know what's going on. That make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think practically that really makes a whole lot of difference.
Okay, I don't think it's still answered my question.
Okay.
Nobody can sell a water right to another ranch member unless they've applied and been given that water right.
Correct.
So, in other words, they would have to be in a water system proposal or a well or whatever, and they've petitioned the board already, and they've been given that 0.45 acre feet of water.
True.
Right?
True.
So somebody can't just go out and say, oh, just sign this little thing saying here. Yeah, you can have my water.
Yeah, you can't.
I don't come up here anyway.
if I have a water right, I have three lots, let's say. And I build I apply to the association like you spelled out to get involved in the water system or to drill my own well, and the association gives me a water right. Then I want to transfer that to another lot. That means I have to give up. I mean, that lot, the water system that I have is now worthless. I have no right to receive water. I've transferred it to someone else. Now, that's impractical. It's not going to happen. But if I have three lots and I have an empty lot, I'm going to have to come to the association, as you've said, to petition to get a water right, and you're going to say, for what?
Right.
And I'm going to have to say, well, I want to use it in this water system. So you are going to have, I mean, practically speaking, I hadn't thought of it this way, but practically speaking,
yeah.
I'm not going to have a water right just sitting there on a lot. I'm either going to be in a water system or I'm going to have a well.
Right.
And so
that helps.
Maybe
that,
we're discussing, you know, something that's kind of.
That helps me accept this.
Okay, well,
better.
Look at it this way. It's just an adjacent lot. Let's say you've got two lots that are alongside of each other. What if Kathy here wants to buy the water rights for me? She's in Podunk, and I'm 3 miles to the side, to the west. Can she buy my water right, or should we say no on that?
I said that she can, but the question is how did she get the water right?
Do you have the water
right? In order to get it from the association, you had to already tell them what water system you're involved in. So you're giving up a water right that's in a pipe, in a well, that you're using to sell to her, and you have to give up that right. So it won't be you won't be able to use that system anymore.
I got a question.
So that restricts it.
I got a question. You know, we're all talking about, you know, each lot or each unit has an appropriation of 0.45 when you prove it up.
Uh-huh.
Why do we have members of this ranch wanting to transfer water from other areas of the ranch if that's already been assigned to each unit? Because we've got a person out there now that's trying to take water from, like, our area, and the large majority of it trying to transfer it. Why, when the lots already have 0.45 acre feet assigned to them, do they need that extra water?
There's not a specific 0.45 acre feet that's assigned. Most of the problems, as I understand, and I've gotten into a lot of it, are dealing with water rights people that was paying for themselves through the state, which none of this applies to us. So if I have a water right, Jody owns a water right. You're the only one I know that has a water right. Jody has a water right that she obtained from the state. Whatever we're talking about here doesn't apply. She can transfer that to me. She can transfer that to the neighbor down here. She can transfer that off the ranch. She can do whatever she wants. She didn't get it from the ranch, so there's no real response.
I'm talking about ranch association water. Why would you be trying to transfer it from one area where it's already designated to another area when there's already water designated there?
Well, there's not water designated there because there are a lot of lots who don't have any water right today. I would say the vast majority of the lots today do not have a water right associated with them or assigned to them. They're all owned by the association.
Yeah, until you petition for it, you don't have it. Yeah, but we had a list 2 years ago handed to us that showed how many water rights were in each area of this ranch. Okay, and supposedly
those are owned by the association.
Those there are owned by the association. Supposedly there's enough there for each of those units in that area. So why do we have members of this ranch wanting to move water from one area to another when there's already water assigned to those areas?
When I was drafting this, I was thinking basically, if I own a lot in one area and another that I want to maximize my use or put in a second residence on my lot, which I'm allowed to do, then I have to have more water. And so rather than going out and trying to find some, then I could transfer water right from my lot. But the idea was transfer from my empty lot to build two residences on my residential lot or to do something else. But as we pointed out with Bill, my empty lot, unless I apply to the state, is not going to have a water right to transfer, so it's kind of moot.
Well, something else on that. The .45 on that each lot is entitled to per the bylaws, the state says that's enough for each, for a family residence to live full time. But they also break it down into either like .23 or .25 is only that's required for recreational. So if you're looking at, we're all recreational out here, except for maybe Rebello and Brent and some, and Nancy and Paul that live here year round. What he's saying is if you've already got .45 from the bylaw, and really, if we're recreational and seasonal, we're only using like max .25 probably of that. Why do we need to have more water? If you wanted to build a second residence, you'd still have double the water being using that .45 anyway.
The answer to that is when we initially talked after the annual meeting, we wanted to foresee in the future. What we're doing now may not be what we're doing in 15 years. We're trying to set up a list of rules that apply, and I think you're going to have a lot more people that have more full-time residents up here in the next 10 years than you have in the past. If we went back 10 years, we wouldn't even have this discussion because nobody's here. So I'm just trying to look forward and basically provide for as much flexibility as possible as far as the transfer of water rights. That's why I put it in there.
Maybe we should just make it, you can't sell more than half of your water rights. That way the water rights won't ever leave that property.
All you're going to use is
2.5. Why don't we make it a limit?
I don't know that I have a big problem with saying you can't sell a water right, you can transfer it.
Yeah.
Because the intention was between somebody that owns two lots, we're worried about somebody making money and buying.
But if they own two lots, they've already got from the ranch an appropriation if they prove up 0.45. So why do they want to transfer? We have an individual at this ranch that wants to transfer from one area to another when there's already water assigned there. That's like trying to take more than they need.
The water sources are not in every area of the ranch.
I understand.
The water source,
but by taking it from one area and putting it in an area where there are already water rights assigned there by the association.
Okay, but that's the thing you're getting confused on. The water source and the water rights are coming from, let's say it's all coming from Middle Canyon Spring, right? In order to get water over Podunk, you've got to do something. Drill a well or, put in a pipeline, open a mountain to get it over there. But those lots are entitled to water from the association.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it has to be in Podunk. There could be a pipeline put in that goes all the way up into Slide Canyon from the Middle Canyon.
I understand that. I understand there's not always water where the water right is, but the paper that was presented to me showed me that how many acre feet were available in each area, and that it was supposed to be enough to supply each unit their 0.45 acre feet. So why do we have somebody in this association trying to transfer from one area of the ranch to another when there's already supposedly enough water right there?
Because I would guess, and I don't know who you're talking about, and I don't know the situation, but I would guess that they probably already have a water right somewhere that they own that they want to change their point of diversion rather than coming to the board and trying to get a new water right. Because if I had two lots...
But it's a lot of water.
It was association water. So they would have to go through that.
Well,
but
they already own it.
Yeah, you can take it.
Have they already been transferred? Do they own the water right, or is it an association?
Association. So they don't own the water right.
They can't do anything. The board is the one that...
But they're trying. That's what I'm saying. Why would they try if that water's already there?
Oh, we don't know.
Maybe they're trying to grow agricultural on their
marijuana. Like that.
Let's just say that there are lots of plant out there, and they're wanting to...
See, I think these are the things that you need to think about, though, when you're talking about this kind of buying and selling and transferring of water rights.
And why don't we adjust the bylaws to say that you can't?
There's very few people who have that much acreage just flat here that they would need the kind of water that's being asked for. So that's what I'm saying is it's almost like a power grab for water.
Greedy.
They don't need that much water. If there's that much water on this ranch and there's supposedly enough for each unit, then why don't they apply in their area for that extra water if there's that much extra?
Or apply to the state for 1.73.
Yeah, or apply to the state.
And leave the association acreage alone.
So how does this
Okay, so you have a specific example here, but I'm not sure. We don't know the answer to that. It's somebody wants to do it. Why they want to do it, I don't know. But are you bringing up this example to shed light on this proposal?
In a minute, yes.
I think it's something that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. So that water can't just be taken from one area of the ranch to supply another area of the ranch, leaving the
water rights,
especially large amounts.
Water rights that are
not the water, it's the amount that's
being asked. You guys control that. You guys decide that.
Yeah, this has to do with water systems, not water rights in general.
The question I might have, does the board have a little control here? In other words, they have to, if it's association water attached to this piece of property that they want to transfer, the board asks them, oh, you want to transfer it to where and why?
They have to apply to the board to get the water right.
Yeah. So, in doing so, you have to say where you're going to use the water and why you're going to. That's all part of the plan.
So if the board sees that, well, this is just not right, they do have a right to say, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, the board has to approve the plan. And then,
so the board could stop, in other words.
Today.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can stop. The way it's written now, we can stop.
Okay.
That's all I want.
John?
Okay, did you have any other points?
Yeah. Just a couple little things on this. Hold on, let me go back to that page. A couple more things that we didn't go over when we were talking about committee that were on previous things I thought should be, and they're pretty simple barriers, so I don't think they're a big deal. In number four, and I don't remember what page now or what section, but it talks about the cost of connection at that time when after the water system is developed and you have someone that wants to join in afterwards, that the cost will be determined by the people that originally put it in. I would like something in there to say, like, something basically, it should be based, the value of the connection should be based somewhere on a fair market value at that time. Something to keep future members from being, like, gouged, perhaps. The other one I wanted to address is that...
Isn't it already written in there that they pay a pro-rata share of the cost?
Yeah, but that it's... But, no, it goes on... Oh, let me find it. It goes on to more than that.
It's the part where it says that the members of that water company will determine... That was in the previous draft. I didn't know that was already in there. Under the proposal that was put forth to be approved, so...
Jody, 12A. Post-construction agreement, paragraph A.
That paper's a little...
Well, guaranteed all costs, any extension or upgrades required to provide service to the owners, and program to share all costs.
Oh, okay. That must have been changed.
Okay.
Oh, and the last thing is, another thing that I think that should be discussed or added in somehow, is that if a group develops a water system off an association-owned source, and let's say Meadow Canyon, just because that's where the cabins are, and say the Meadow Canyon, or say the cabin system would have, we built 10 more cabins and we need more water. If the association would decide to hook onto that system, then it would pay the appropriate cost and everything, the share of that, of the original cost. But I think that at that time, the association, once they hook on, is not charged any monthly fees or anything like that, that water is just used for the association purposes, no fees attached.
Guess I don't understand your question.
So if there was a parallel water system that needed to be, say, drawn from Meadow Canyon, because the capacity is so great.
Okay.
But they want to use the same spring box, but right before it goes out to the water, this other water system, it's... The pipe is split, so to speak, and there's volume enough to do it, then that the association would, or the other group or whatever, would pay those costs of the original development, right?
To hook up, mm-hmm.
Now, pay what costs?
Well, if they want to hook up to the system already, the new system in place, they pay their fair share, like was already outlined, but then there'll be, like, the association will never be charged for using their own water.
No.
Because they don't own the water itself. They own their water.
From that private system.
So if we're using Meadowkin, and normally the costs that are paid monthly that are regularly are your power for pumping. Meadowkin,
right.
The system is not going to have a pump. It's all gravity flow. So would there be additional costs to the caverns hooking onto that system, like a monthly bill? I think so, because there's no cost.
Well, I'm just talking about monthly cost to use that water, even though a system was already built from a private group.
The association owns its own water right, so it's using its own water.
Okay, all right.
The other people own their water right, and so they have the water that they're using flowing into their pipes. If you had a for-profit water company or something like that, it would be the only situation where you could even charge. This is my opinion. And so I think the question is, do they hook onto the existing system? Then they would have to pay the pro rata share of construction of that system. If they're simply shooting water out of the same hole and running a parallel pipeline to their own, there's no cost to them at all of that.
I think I'm thinking of scenario number one. The first one that you talked about,
hooking
into the system.
It'd be like anybody else that pay the pro rata share of the cost of construction and hook in, and because they're going to be relying or using their own water rights to draw that water out. So,
but the example you gave was, we as the association are building more cabins and providing the water from the same source. So,
well, the wood doesn't supply to that many cabins. If we had to go to Meadow Canyon in spring and hook on to that system to do it.
There's no cost of development.
So it's a pro rata share of what they cost under.
If it were on the other scenario, if it were on a well, then yes, the associates would have to pay their share of, electricity or gasoline or whatever I would anticipate.
Okay. Good?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Back to the table.
Okay, so I don't think we need to take any other straw poll things. I think that clarifies it to the committee, sort of the feelings of the board.
Well, we can go back and discuss this committee. I understand that there's an issue on metering. Did we resolve the first-come, first-serve language?
There was a majority that...
in favor of it. I can't give you much better of an interpretation than
yeah.
A fair way I could think of to treat everyone equally.
That was resolved. That was okay.
And then...
then it was split on the sale of water.
Okay, so I don't know how to be honest with you, for the board or for any members or anything else other than going out and calling people and listening. I don't know what to do with the metering thing. It's either in or it's out. And if we send it, if they're looking for an amendment to the bylaw and you want the members to vote, then there's going to be an issue. If you adopt it as a rule, obviously that's a different.
Well, I wanted you to do a little more, the committee to do a little more homework. I want an absolute answer, an inquiry to the state, an absolute answer.
Whether it's required, I understand
right.
That cost.
It's on if it's a cost.
And then the cost. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I can answer first.
And
the only reason I'm asking this is to get clear direction, because
yeah.
I've tried to move this along. I'd really like to have this done and over with.
Right. I think everybody would, Barry, and I just tried to give you some feedback of the feeling here.
Well, I appreciate the input. The sale and the transfer of water rights, we can discuss that further. I think there's some whittling we can do there. I just don't know exactly what to do other than give you more information on the metering issue.
How about cutting it in half, 2.5? You can only sell 2.5.
What
transfer? 2.45 right now.
Oh, that's
if you want to buy the one
How about this? How about if we put the language that each lot has to retain sufficient for recreational use, which is 0.23 or 0.25.
I can look that up. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I would be okay with that also.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
No lot will be sold without some water.
Does that solve the issue for everybody?
I think so. Straw poll? Straw poll, does that solve the issue?
That's right.
Okay, so we'll just use the language, the minimum required by the state for recreational use. Because if we put in 2.25 and they change it, then you're screwed.
Yeah. Okay, so that helps out one issue. And the other is
the meter issue.
The meter issue, and so the meter issue. If after you look at the cost, your group or side, you actually look at the cost. We look at the requirement. If it is a requirement, it's a new point. If it's not a requirement, then we're still back to the same thing.
If it's a requirement. And it already says in there that each system will be built to the state, to the law. So if it's a requirement of the state, then it's already going to be a requirement that it's there.
The metering, I'm going along with what Barry said. He wanted to do this selling or transferring of water rights. If he's thinking 10, 15 years down the road, to me, metering is thinking 10 to 15 years down the road. It's the same principle. Now, if I want to go out and calculate the size of this pipe and the distances, I don't want to calculate. Branch managers, there is a meter. We have meters on systems now. Talk 10 to 15 years down the road.
Okay. I think that's why we're all in favor. That's why we're in favor.
Trying to protect it as the other is trying to be protected.
Yeah.
One thing, if you put in $50,000 for a system, $2,500 is nothing.
So I guess we're asking you, Barry, to take our feelings back to them and see if there's any, if they can compromise or not with after our discussion.
Either give them a strong cup of coffee or a shot of whiskey before you talk to them.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Lower them down.
Then we're gonna move on and try to close this meeting, basically. Agriculture, Leland's talked to us a little bit about it, but I thought proxy votes isn't particularly under agriculture. Do you still want to talk about that?
I'd just like to address it a little bit.
Okay, Leland has a point he wants to make about proxy votes.
I think we're all buying out here in the Deer Springs Ranch as individuals, and I think this proxy vote thing kind of undermines the individuality of the buyers. I think our members should be encouraged to speak and vote their conscience, not allow somebody else to vote for them or give them the votes. I think it should come from them individually. That's what they want out here, is individuality. So I think that should be...
You're saying either they speak up or there's no vote.
Exactly. I think they should speak their mind so we, as a ranch, know where they're coming from. That when you get somebody that runs ramshaw, that pretty much kind of shuts everybody else down. I think the individuality needs to be maintained. And if we can do away with proxies, I'd be happy.
I think there was some email or discussion on whether or not HOAs provided for or said that there had to be that possibility of a proxy vote or not. Does anybody know anything about that?
Required by state law.
An attorney, actually Bruce Jenkins, and he said that there's several in the state of Utah that have done away proxy votes. He says it would have to be voted by the membership, of course, but it has been done here in Utah.
As many things are HOA, it's all balanced to look into that because in Las Vegas and Nevada, as many HOA rules are similar in California as well as Nevada and Utah, and they say CD statutes. According to NRS 116 in Nevada, we do not have proxies. So I can understand exactly what she's saying. According to what Bruce Jenkins, it depends on what the board, what the membership allows. It can be done. And Bob, if you could ask that question at one of the HOA meetings,
if that is indeed true, you could follow through. If indeed, that's what you're talking about.
Okay.
Actually, I think Bruce's company is actually the one that puts on those meetings. So, yeah. So I think that's the answer. And from talking to I don't remember who before, if it was an attorney or something. Anyway, the HOA, whatever they decide, overrules sometimes what state law would be.
There are some places where it's flexible, where as long as you meet a certain minimum, then you can override state law and bylaws and those kind of things. But I disagree. I don't think with bylaws with votes, it's there, first of all, for your protection so that you have a quorum at your meeting so that you can actually do business. Because unless you have 50% of the people actually show up, you have no meeting. And I don't know that you've ever had a meeting where you've had 50% or anywhere near that.
True.
So basically, your annual meeting is a flush down the toilet.
Oh, that was really good here.
Number two, I don't think that you can. I'd be happy to check it, or almost to check into it. I'd be interested to know what his feelings are, but you're basically saying that your meetings are going to be impossible to have. I agree that the unique nature of the members needs to be maximized. I think the members need to be encouraged to vote their mind, but taking away the right for proxies is basically going to mean you never have an annual meeting. There's no way you're going to get a right.
If you have a mailed-in vote, does that count?
No, voting by mail is not a proxy. That's completely separate.
I know. That wouldn't count, though. You could just come in by mail. And
we had over 200 votes this year. So, and like the last 3 years.
Got a waiver from back in the back there.
Why are we still doing paper votes at all? Why can't we do it all electronically? Require every single member to vote electronically. They don't have to be here. They can turn in their votes. But all the counting that took place, as long as it took to count the votes and whether they were accurate or whether they were whatever, that shouldn't even be done on paper or with here. It should be done with independent company that's unbiased. Why are we still doing it the old-fashioned way on paper?
But that'd be costly, though, wouldn't it?
There's a company called SurveyMonkey that you can go up and set up a survey.
Oh, yeah, we know about SurveyMonkey.
You get a link to that. The person gets to email the link to it. Go in, you make your choices, you chip submit. That's your vote. And then the person that set that up actually gets a report to you.
You know what? Right now, we're not, by our bylaws, we're not allowed to vote email. Even the board can't vote email yet. So that would be something that has to be changed. Yeah, that could be changed. Yeah, and some of the companies in Utah are doing that now, but some they have to adjust the bylaws. We would have to adjust the bylaws to do that.
No, you're going to have to adjust the bylaws either way. Whether you do away with proxies or whether you change it to electronic voting, it's something that needs to be addressed. As long as you can verify or there's a way to verify that the people voting are voting and that kind of stuff, then whatever you guys decide is easiest.
Good idea. All right, so where do we take that idea? Jeff, this is kind of your expertise area. Yeah.
My areas of expertise haven't been
defined.
Solidified.
Yeah, we didn't finish that last month, did we?
No.
We didn't.
Well, anything to do with communication, you know, whether it's the web page or this idea about voting or...
Well, communications, that includes the newsletters and printed materials that go out and the phones. I mean, is that communication? Is that itself or is that still up in the air?
Well, I do the newsletter.
Well,
so probably you would be the person to... over it, right?
Kind of? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody else standing up to take that spot? I think.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the one that...
You and Vance and who...
You submit stuff, and I always... I try to review it, and... as to how it's accomplished, I mean, Vance has been a great help to us.
The one that makes sure it's all written up and...
I guess I was thinking that's fine, but I was thinking too more in terms of her suggestion. I don't want to just talk about it and have nothing happen. I want us Is there a cost? What does that company charge? How do we verify? They must verify. They must have a system. Maybe at some point in time you can tell us more about that.
We've done that before, actually. And some of our members were really irate about the name. What do you want me to do with monkey, whatever it is? I knew what it was, but I had to explain it to a lot of members.
Don't we have like 20% of our association that doesn't do email? 20 or 25?
No, there's a good portion that don't do computer.
That's part of the problem. Okay, any more discussion, Lena, you want to have?
Good.
You good? Okay.
Don't forget that. Great.
I'll jump in there. My question.
Okay.
I don't have anything else. But there was one other thing. Oh, the forest thing.
Okay, yes. All right, Vance, I hope you're listening. I need you to put this link on the website.
Go ahead.
And maybe we should email this to you.
Be better. That would be better.
Okay. Anyway, this Mark Carrera telling us what they call their scoping period. Anyway, it's been published in the Spectrum, and so we're in that probably 10, 12 days into a 30-day period where we can give comments. And what I'm asking Vance to do is make sure we get this on our website. And I think probably, Linda, we should have, this would be a good thing for us to do on our email flash.
Yeah, I didn't have a link for it, so I will do that this week.
And so here's that link for you. I'm going to give this to you, Jeff. One other item on communication. Dale sent me a package. And in this package, I think what he's asking me is, he's saying, this is what we send out to people when we sell them a lot. And it comes addressed to the lot owner. So like this one's to me, Dear Phil. Well, I'll read this to you. This is a sample of our new owner packet that we are now sending out to all new lot owners through our sales effort. I had this made up with specific mapping for you, which you did for my lot, and pictures, as if you were a new owner featuring your property so you might see the information that we send out to others. Of course, the actual packet will reflect the lots purchased by the client. We don't want to duplicate any of the new owner information that is being sent out by the board of directors after we notify Linda Alderman of the transaction and the recording of the deed. We wanted to get your thoughts and input on how we might improve anything in this packet. Please feel free to pass this on to the committee that handles membership issues. We would welcome any recommendations. So I think as this meeting adjourns, I want you all to maybe take a look at this packet. I think the only question that we have is, we had a little discussion on sometimes members get confused as to the fact that there is a Deer Springs Ranch Owners Association and that we have our rules and regulations, this, that, and the other, and maybe confused thinking that Dale is the one running the ranch. I think this is really nicely done, but I would like you, Jeff, to kind of
welcome to the.
I think we should discuss that. I think we should come up with, do we need to send something else? Do we need to send something that tells about the difference or who we are and who, you know, the salesperson is, the branding, you know, the whole thing of DSROA.org versus DSROA.org. Deer Springs Ranch.com, not DSROA. But anyway, that kind of brings up that kind of feeling or scenario that there's a little bit of perhaps implied stuff, although I think this would be very helpful to a new member. It's pretty pretty inclusive. Yes, Candy?
That was one of the things that we
So we need to look at the whole mechanics of, yes, when Linda's notified that we have a new member.
I requested the newer 15, the 19 new lots that were sold. I had wanted to do that, and I had mentioned it to you. I thought that was really important coming from the board, not from a realtor, not from investors.
Okay, well, I'm gonna appoint, I want Jeff to work with you on that, and well, I welcome that kind of input, and if anybody else has ideas, give it to Jeff and Candy. But I think that's a necessary thing, even though Dale's doing something which is very nice for those people that just bought lots here. It's quite a pack of information. So I'll leave that for you also to peruse, and suggest that, well, I probably ought to
The scoping thing?
The scoping thing is what they call scoping. It would be like public input. Oh, where you want the scoping.
So it doesn't blow away.
They will listen, but they pretty well have their plan.
Yeah, they do.
You know?
Yeah.
And if you want to see what the plan is, and if you have any strong objections, then you can, so, you know, you can tell them. I think from the board, I would like to send a thing that says something like this. We appreciated you, you know, contacting us, which they did, involving us, and our members are aware of this, and they may or may not have input. Our output is, and this is where they claim that they are trying to protect the neighbors from the forest here, because in general, I told him of our major concern about burns and how burns have gotten out of control at times in the state of Utah. And he assured me in certain areas it was going to be mechanical. They would have little piles that they would burn. But I think it's in the Broad Hollow area. There's more than 50% down trees and stuff. I took a ride on a horse through there, and it's just unreal, all the dead and the trees. And I'm not sure if I'm talking about Slide Canyon. That's further up, right?
Is that the trail that goes underneath the Pink Cliffs?
Yeah, the trail goes underneath the Pink Cliffs and then
Crawford
down.
Pass.
And Crawford Pass Trail comes out. And does it come out in Slide King? The Broad Hollow, is that? Around the Red Reservoir. What is that called up there?
Pipeline.
Okay.
Hey, Phil.
It kind of still reserved. Yeah?
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I found it online. Do you want me to read you their synopsis?
Sure.
It says, Deer Springs Vegetation Management Project. Purpose is to trend vegetation towards desired conditions per forest plan, reduce risk of stand replacing fire, improve wildlife habitat condition, and improve and maintain Meadow Canyon riparian ecosystem. That's their one-sentence summary.
Okay.
No. There's
a little map.
Pages and pages and pages of stuff, but that's their synopsis.
All right.